Representative Earhart moves approval of the 22nd meeting of the Ways and Means Committee. As many as are in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Members, I am chairing this meeting tonight as the designee of Representative Knobloch, who's had a family emergency. Probably the best I can put it. His brother-in-law passed away late this afternoon from a heart attack, and Jim's with his family, and I'm sure that everybody wishes the Knobloch family Godspeed in dealing with this issue. Tonight we are going to take up two bills, the Omnibus Agriculture Bill and then the Omnibus Education Bill. If you're in the room for the Omnibus Environment and Natural Resources Bill, we will not be taking that up tonight, so word of the wise. So we will first take up the Omnibus Agriculture Bill. Representative Osment moves that House File 1420 be recommended to pass and placed on the General Register. Representative Osment, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. This is the Omnibus Agriculture Finance and Policy Bill. The issues that we'll be looking at tonight will be on the funding side. This bill has a lot of different components within it. It balances out with regard to the our target. We only had one target, and so there's even though there's a couple of different scenarios around here with regard to agriculture, we had the same target for both scenarios. And this is the bill that funds the Department of Agriculture and a variety of other activities that deal with our agricultural communities. You have in your packets a bill summary that really goes through the different types of appropriations. This bill is basically what the governor has proposed, because our target is exactly the same as the governor's proposal. And so we've been, if you look through the bill, you'll see that there are also, and through the summary, you'll notice that there are a number of different key changes. These are recommendations that have come to us from the department and through the governor's recommendations. And we believe that the provisions within the bill with regard to the financial areas have been very non-controversial. We have some policy issues that have been in the bill that have generated a little more discussion, but nothing that has been of any serious consequence to my knowledge, and that we have within the committee itself seem to be very comfortable with this overall bill. Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Mr. Reinholtz quickly go over a couple of the specifics with regard to the appropriation recommendations. That we believe should be brought to the committee's attention.
Mr. Reinhold, welcome back to the committee, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I will speak to the, you should have a spreadsheet package, and I will quickly review the changes primarily in the spreadsheet. So if you would refer to the legal size package of spreadsheets. First page is merely a summary of the general fund only by the agencies and the with ethanol broken out so it can be highlighted. And as Chairman Osment indicated, this bill is on the target. The target was $85,834,000, and that is the net effect of this bill, primarily in expenditures, $85,816,000 in expenditures. One new general fund tax item that is $26,000 over the biennium. I would then move through the details of the spreadsheet. If you turn over the first general fund only page, you'll see the complete spreadsheet. And it begins on page one with the Department of Agriculture. And I will just highlight the changes. The changes begin on line 19. And in the beekeeping activity, the apiary fees, there is a $26,000 worth of increased activity This money is generated through increased fees. Primarily it will be used for the development, beginnings of a GIS-based system that can that will locate the beehives for those persons that are involved in both apiary and in pesticide spraying. Line 20 is a new appropriation of $295,000 of general fund over the biennium for increased monitoring in groundwater for pesticides. Line 22 from the remediation fund is an increase in the MRLA administration, primarily to cover increased inflationary costs in that activity. On line 24, 25 are two new items in the agricultural fund. Both of these are in the egg fund. They're both financed by increased fees. The nursery photosanitary one is adjustments being made because major changes made in 2003 did not raise the income expected, so some adjustments are made so the program is fully funded by fees. Line 26 in the agronomy program fees, there are increased inspections and that will bring in increased fees and increased expenditures as indicated of $886,000 over the biennium. Moving on to page 2, changes in page 2 begin on line 53. There are some increased appropriations in the House recommendation, $110,000 for grain buyer and storage inspection activities. This is mostly due to increasing legal expenses of the program. Line 55 is the livestock siting assistance. This was an initiative of the governor's, and the House funds it at the request of $200,000. This will be used for technical assistance to local governments. Line 56 is livestock owner and air research grant. This is going to the University of Minnesota, one time only, $220,000 for some research on the problem of livestock facilities, odor, and air. Line 57 is a grant to the food bank, Second Harvest Milk Grant. The funds will be used to purchase milk to be distributed to the food bank system. The next change item would be on page 3. If you turn to page 3, still in the Ag Department, line 95. The Ag Department is moving into a new building in October of this year. There are increased costs in the lease. There are two line items here to cover those increased costs. On 95 is the general fund appropriation. It's increased by $4,249,000. And also on line 99, the House recommends an increase of $50,000 over the biennium from the Ag Fund to cover a portion of those building costs. Moving back up to line 96, there is a grant of $145,000 over the biennium to the Northern Minnesota Turf Seed Research Committee. This will be used for doing basic research on turf grass, the seed growing in northern Minnesota. Line 98 is a slight $20,000 increase in the administrative appropriation for the loan programs administered by the department. That then would be the changes in the Department of Ag. If you move on to page 4, the Animal Health Board is on line 132 of page 4. There is a change item in the Animal Health Board, line 139. They are also moving into the new office building along with the Ag Department. They have an increased appropriation of $314,000 over the biennium to cover those increased costs. The next agency on line 150 is the Ag Utilization Research Institute. There's no changes in this agency. They're funded at their base. On line 161 is the Minnesota Horticultural Society. On line 163 indicates a $10,000 appropriation in the first year of the biennium to the Horticultural Society. Moving on to page 5, this is Article 2 of the bill. It contains just one appropriation, and it is bonding authority for the Rural Finance Authority, and appropriates out $18 million worth of bonds that will be used for the various loan programs that are operated by the RFA, which is part of the Department of Agriculture. These bonds are user finance bonds and will be repaid by those to the fee collectors and through the repayment of the loans. That really is the changes. If you move on to page 6, it's a summary of the revenue changes in this area. There's only one Ag Department General Fund revenue change, and that's on line 175. That is the beekeeping fees being raised slightly, $26,000 for the biennium. The non-general fund items are listed on 181 to 183. They are fees paid primarily for the inspections and services that the Ag Department has for food and agricultural industry. Moving on to line 7, this is just summary data indicating both the base request, the Gov's request, and the House request. And as it's indicated on columns N and M and X, indicating the differences between the House and the base and the House and the governor. I will only highlight a couple of totals on line 231. If you look at column M, you'll see that the House recommendations are $7,499,000 over the base request in expenditures. If you look at line X, or column X, excuse me, still on line 231, you'll see that the House recommendation is $468,000 over the governor's in expenditures. The next section is really the general fund summary, and I already reviewed that on the front page. I'll cover that again. And if you turn to the last page, page 8 on the back of the spreadsheet is just a comparison by agency of the general fund appropriations both from the base request, the governor's request, and the House recommendation. Just the same information that laid out by agencies on this page, so you can see the differences between the base, House, and governor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We stand for questions and or amendments.
Representative Pimer.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Reinhaus, I'm just curious. When does the ethanol producer payments? When are we done with them? I mean, when is the last plant?
Mr. Reinhaus,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pamer, the program is set up to end in 2010.
Regardless, does that also include any new plants? I mean, do they get producer payments or? Is everything over in 2010?
Mr. Reinhold, Representative, there are new plants coming online now do not get payments. The payments are scheduled to end for those plants that were online during the period that the program was accepting the plants. And the statute ends in 2010. We do have a situation where we're making up back payments for because there has been reduced payment, and that may continue beyond 2010, but no new production is eligible for payments past 2010.
Thank you.
We do have some amendments. Why don't we take the amendments first? First one we'll take is the A33 amendment. Equine floating teeth. Who wishes to take credit for this? Representative Osmond will move the A33 amendment. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This has been a compromise that has worked out by Representative Hackbarth on how to deal with this issue. And it's been between the Board of Animal Health, I believe, and veterinary activities and the people that want to have the ability to file off the teeth of horses.
Any discussion on the amendment? As many as are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I now go ahead and get my teeth cleaned at this
We'll go on to the A42 amendment of the revolving loan account. I believe that's the Hamilton amendment. Representative Hamilton moves the A42 amendment. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. A couple things on this. This was sent over from the department also. The first line on page 5, actually it's line 26, before the period, you insert and administer a dairy investment tax credit program. That's so we can get the program up and running and have someone to administer it, as it said. On page 45, line 8, this is some cleanup language for the livestock equipment loan program. And following on page 46, basically there's three loan programs administered and consolidated and allows the fees to be collected and deposited into new accounts. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to attempt to answer them.
Representative Osmond, any
ideas?
Representative Solberg.
In what kind of accounts are they? Are they deposited? Into what kind of accounts are they deposited?
Representative Hamilton?
It would be into the dairy tax credit program. It would be for the dairy tax investment tax credit program.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Solbert.
I don't know very much about it, but the revolving loan account is established. But if it goes to the dairy tax credit, is that a tax issue then?
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Solbert, I believe this is the account, the revolving loan account that we handled the manure digester program out in the past. And, this is to continue that activity.
So, Mr. Chairman, are we changing the how that that money from that fund can be used, or how we're depositing it into that fund?
We can ask the department.
Hey, would you please? The department down.
Good to have my old Mr. Chair, my old colleague in front of us.
Well, we all remember Representative Borboom kindly. Representative Solberg, Mr. Borboom, please identify yourself to the tape, and I think that Representative Solberg has a question or two.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Borboom, Assistant Commissioner with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Representative Hamilton is correct in the fact that we took a methane digester loan program and a value-added stock loan program, consolidated that into one account, and then also from that account we're going to administer a new loan program, which is the livestock loan program. So essentially we have three loan programs eligible from one revolving account, and the amendment just allows us to capture the $50 application fee or the $100 application fee and also deposit that money into the new account.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion on the amendment? If any are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. The 840 amendment, is that yours, Representative Osmond?
Yes, that's it here.
Representative Osmond moves the 840 amendment. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is some cleanup language of some statutes that are in the happen to be in this particular bill that just changes constables, peace officers, and it just upgrades the language. I'm told it's purely technical.
Any discussion? Many are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. Motion does prevail. Next is the 841 amendment. Is that yours also, Representative Osmond? Or who's this?
I believe that... Mr. Chair, I do not believe we're going to offer that at this time.
It's not going to be offered. Are there any other amendments? Representative Rukavina.
I was all set to go on E41 because I was wondering why we had gross misdemeanors, if somebody was milking their cow wrong or what's the deal in the ag bill. So I was all set to go on this one, but I'm kind of disappointed now.
Any further discussion?
Representative Solberg, just to clarify, of the general fund, the amount that's being appropriated, you're increasing fees. Is it $1 million? That on page 187, is that the fee increase? Page what? Line 187.
Yes, on page 6 of the spreadsheet, line 87 shows the total revenue change, which is $1,346,000 for the biennium. The majority of that is in the AIG fund. The $1,326,000
is general. Mr. Chairman, just one other point then. I've heard lots of things about beekeepers, more than what I wanted to know about them. I have some friends who keep bees. The governor had requested a large increase, I understand, in the fees for beekeepers. We're increasing it somewhat. Is that correct?
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg. The department did some significant negotiating on this, and I believe that the agreement is in the bill.
Yeah, but that doesn't tell me what it is. I mean, I know it's agreements in the bill, but tell me how much it was, how much it is, and so I can defend my beekeeping friends when they come after me for their fee.
What I'm saying, yeah. Representative Osmond, or there's somebody from the department. Could you identify yourself for the tape and answer Representative Silberg's question?
Mr. Chair, my name is Greg Bezicki. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, the fees on apiary are for registration. They were at $10 per beekeeper, regardless of how many hives that the beekeeper had. These were essentially the same as what they were in 1943. We proposed an increase, and upon discussion with the hobbyists and the commercial beekeepers, the proposal now is a hobbyist defined as someone who has less than 50 hives would pay $25, and a commercial operator who has more than 25 hives would pay $50.
Who's going to volunteer to count the hives? Yeah.
And if I had 26, would I claim it?
Any further questions or comments? Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Osmond, I'm wondering if you can just give us a little information about Section 60, on page 41, starting on 41, that relates to the ethanol producer payments. I see that creating a rural economic infrastructure fund here, and can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Representative Osmond. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, we are providing a definition for the rural economic infrastructure that you can read there, so that later on in the provision where we get on page 44, we have a section on starting in line 16 where that infrastructure is purposes for it are identified.
Representative Solberg,
clarification. I don't think this comes into effect until 2012. Is that correct?
Correct. Representative Osmond. I believe that's correct, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion or questions? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm interested if you could comment on the feedlot zoning ordinance sections of the bill. I've received a fair amount of correspondence by some folks that are concerned about local ordinances being overridden. What's happening there, and have you arrived at any consensus-type language, or is it so controversial?
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. There's no overriding of local ordinances at all in this process. What is happening is that there's some identification of when ordinances with regard to feedlots are actually being considered, and we do ask for some notification of different agencies be identified so that they can participate in that process, but it's in no way trying to overrule what's happening at the local level.
Representative Carlson.
Is that true of townships as well?
Mm-hmm. Representative Osmond. True of townships.
That's correct.
That's true.
Chair, was there at one time, the correspondence I received seemed to...
I better have the mic, I guess. The correspondence that I was receiving kept referencing overriding of local ordinances. You say nothing is in here now. Was there at one time a proposal in where local ordinances would have been overridden?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, I believe there was one time there was people thought that that might be a result of some task force recommendations. To my knowledge, that recommendation never occurred, and that it really is a just a matter of communication is what the task force has really tried to assure.
Thank you.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the... summary on page 10 of the summary, 86, it said, establishes a procedure the municipality must follow when proposing a new or amended zoning control over feedlots. What's in that procedure?
Representative Osmond.
you know about it?
Mr. Chair, if I could have Representative Hamilton address that specific.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I did serve on the Governor's Livestock Task Force, and when it came to local control, it was a very important issue, and that's why the Governor's Livestock Task Force did ask for a sub-task force to bring in members from the Association of Townships and Counties to be a part of that discussion. There is not language to take away local control. That is a misconception. The language as it states right now is supported by the Association of Townships. And just like Representative Osment said, it is a due process or a notification process, so individuals know if a township or others are going to be changing their ordinance or be discussing the ordinance.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Matt, all in favor? Representative Osment renews his motion that House File 1420, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. As many as are in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
Motion does prevail.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
No. Representative Solberg.
I know that you already passed the bill, but I was hoping that I could sue for somebody for me getting fat. Section 88. Someone has to take my responsibility. No, I can't sue her. That's the same pot of air, pot of money.
I got lamb and I got pot. I had a lamb. I think that might be the fastest finance going in here. You did send some more to put off. That one.
Just in case.
Is that from your election?
Oh, that's great. That's a great idea.
But surely they don't get the same amount they got the year before.
Where did you have your official?
They're not educated. Yeah. So I know the economy is still in there, but so. $308,000 be made up.
$10.
Representative Sikora moves that House File 872 be recommended to pass. Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll just run through some of the main highlights of the bill, and then I have a couple of author's amendments. Which would you like me to take first?
I would prefer to take the bill focusing on the fiscal impacts of the bill.
Right.
Because there are some non-fiscal issues in the bill. And then we will take the author's amendments and other amendments. And we will be out of here at midnight having either voted for the bill or not voted for the bill. But we will be done by midnight, won't we, Representative Solberg?
Oh, long before that.
Representative,
your professed preference to vote for it
or again?
No, we will either vote tonight or we will vote some other time. Oh, okay. We will be out of here by midnight, Representative Carl. So that's what I meant. That's what I meant to say.
Okay, very good.
That's a good rule, Representative Anderson. A very good rule. I think you were the one who first advocated for it when you were Speaker, Representative Anderson. But Representative Sikora, we are on the bill, and why don't we concentrate on the fiscal aspects, understanding that this group will probably wander. Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, somebody offered me dinner if I could be done here in less than an hour, so I am highly motivated. I don't know if I should talk faster and faster or how I should do this, but we'll see how it goes. First of all, the target amount in this bill is $12.6 billion. What we are spending is $622 million in aid, and then there is another $112 million in levy. There's a formula increase of 3% and 3% in both years 6 and 7 for a total cost of $360 million over base. There is quality comp or alternative compensation in the bill, $260 per pupil for a total cost, aid cost of $84 million. There's operating capital increase, $20 per pupil per year for a total cost of $31 million. There's a gifted and talented program funding, $18 million in 06 and $15 in years after that for a total of $29 million. There's excess special ed cost increase of $22 million. There's early childhood and family education increase. It's now at $96 for students under 5. That's the amount that you raise. And that goes to $115 in 06 and $125 in 07 for a cost of $16 million, and that $125 is carried into the future. Telecommunications access for $4.5 million a year, a total of $9 million. There's equity in this for low referendum districts, an increase of $9 million total, bringing them up to 10% of the state average referendum amount. There's a transportation sparsity increase of 8%, and there's referendum equalization aid increase, equalizing the first $600 instead of the first $500, which costs $7 million. The option A payment has a shift of $134 million. Option B would not have to do the shift, but the spending in the bill amounts to the same no matter which one we take. If we use option A, shifting the $134 million, we reduce the current year payments from 84.3 to 82.2%. Then if you want to take a look at the sheet that you have there, Mr. Crow will just point out, I think, the highlights on your dollar tracking sheet.
Crow, identify yourself for the tape and welcome back.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Crow from the Fiscal Analysis Department. I'd like to point your attention to the legal-sized paper printed landscape that says in the upper left, Education Finance 2005 Session Appropriation Tracking HF 872. Representative Sikora has highlighted the significant spending items. To find them on the sheet, the easiest way to look for the changes is to go to the seventh column from the right, where it says house minus base. You'll see on the left the program description. If it's italicized, that means there's a spending change. So, for example, on line 10, you see basic formula increase. The difference house minus base is $360 million. There are 5 pages of appropriation changes, and then after the appropriations, there are 3 pages of levy changes. I won't go through them in detail. We'll just let what Representative Sikora highlighted suffice for now.
Are there questions about the tracking sheet from anyone?
Any question, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Crow, would you identify that again for me so I can... is that the house minus current law difference? Is that what you're referring to?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that's how it's described on the levy tracking sheet.
Okay.
If you look at the levy tracking sheet, there's 3 groups of columns.
Mm-hmm.
The first group of columns is the current biennium. As you know, we don't make changes to FY06 levies because we're already in the middle of pay 05. So that'll stay the same. And then the next group of the other 6 columns in that group are the FY07 changes in levies. And then the middle group of columns clumped together, the 6, is fiscal 2008. And then the far right group of columns, 6 columns, is fiscal 2009 on levies. So if you look at the 7th column from the left on the levy sheet that says house minus current law difference, you'll see where there are changes to levies in the bill. For example, on line 9 of the levy tracking sheet, it says transition pre-kindergarten. $4.5 million.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
For clarification, then, does that mean that there's $4.527 million increase in property tax?
Mr. Kroll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Solberg, that is
Ms.
the... That is the High Five program that Minneapolis and St. Paul and some of the districts have. And they're being allowed to carry that forward with levy.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Solberg,
but under current law, that I want to understand, that's an increase over current law. Is that correct?
Representative Sikora.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, it is an increase in levy. That's right.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
All right, then I would go ahead with my first author's amendment, A63.
Okay, it's the A63 amendment. Representative Sikora moves the A63 amendment be adopted. Representative Sikora.
Yes, the first, essentially the first 14 lines are strictly technical. You get to line 15 and it references staff development. In our bill, we do not mandate a 2% set aside. So there is no set aside, staff development set aside in this bill. On the next page, we're looking at supplemental agreements, and this is for line 8. Anybody who goes into the alternative teacher pay program, if they already have an agreement in place and decide to do the QComp program, this allows them to do a supplementary agreement without reopening everything and having to go through all the bargaining again. So this just allows them to do a supplemental agreement solely for the purpose of the alternative pay provisions. The next one, starting at line 20, this is relating to special education, and yeah, it's technical, it's already in the bill, but this is technical in kind of how the department will handle it. Essentially now, districts will not have to bill each other for services provided. The state will handle that and just adjust the payments that go out to the districts for special ed, so they won't have to mess around with it. And then when we get to the next, let's see, what's 158? All right, I'm sorry. Page 1, line 7, references the Special Ed Task Force. And line 14 goes on with definitions of direct classroom expenditures for a bill that was carried by Representative Klinzing, so that it defines what direct classroom expenditures are. Under section 20, line 29, the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation progress report, we had forgotten to put into the MELF language that they would make some kind of an interim report in 08. They are sunsetted in 011, and they would make an interim progress report in 08. And that's the end of that amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on the amendment? Many of those are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion fails. Amendment is adopted.
Chairman, just
Representative Solberg.
Trying to understand.
Well, if you don't understand, Representative Solberg, we'll go back. Representative Solberg.
Just on page 3, lines 19 through in that area, the total expenditure for general food service funds. My school district charges the kids, and they have pays for themselves. So is that going to be counted as part of their 65 or not part of their 65 or 35?
Representative Sikora.
I believe, Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, that would not be part of classroom expenditures.
So even though it's self-supporting, it becomes part of the not classroom expenditures accounting for for the district.
That's right. Classroom expenditures, Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, would not include lunch.
Well, I understand it's not a classroom expenditure, but it's also self-supporting. So it seems to me that then if the school district is have self-supporting, that it's a penalty for them. I don't understand this. I don't think anybody does.
I'm sorry, Representative Solberg. I don't quite understand your question, but I'll refer to Representative Klingsing because this is her bill and her language.
Representative Klingsing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, the expenditure that would be considered part of the 35% non-classroom expenditures would be those expenditures that are not paid for by the students. So any money above and beyond what's paid for the food program, beyond what they collect from students, would not be considered.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think in the Uniform Financial Accounting and Reporting Standards that money is part of the school budget, is reported. Because if it's been a year since I've done this, but it seems to me that that has to be part of the accounting system under UFARS. And what you're going to say is if a school district, if they all bring their lunch from home, they get a benefit, but if they have a hot lunch program that's self-supporting under this, they get penalized. But I'll wait for some additional information on that since we've already passed the bill.
I think Mr. Crow can explain exactly how it works, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Crow, Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, the way the language is drafted, the food service fund is included in the denominator of the calculation of classroom instruction versus total instruction, not the net of food service expenditures minus fees, but the total food service expenditures.
So, Mr. Chairman, if my school has a hot lunch program and it's self-supporting, it becomes part of the denominator, but it's then counted against the classroom expenditures. So if a school doesn't have a hot lunch program and as everyone bring their bag lunch, their denominator is less than they meet the standard easier. So that seems a little bit kind of a little bit foolish. I mean, that would say that the school districts are better off not having a hot lunch program. They're self-sustaining. And all the kids have to bring their bag lunch. But that's what somebody wants on some right-wing group.
Representative Klingsing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, we've gone to great lengths to try to deal with issues like that in this definition, and including excluding tuition payments between schools, which was included on the state's website and still is. And that's something that school districts don't like to have included, as well as some other things listed here that are excluded. So if that sort of self issue can be changed, because we aren't trying to penalize, but we are trying to measure the amount of dollars going directly to the classroom.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this isn't my fight at all, but it seems to me it's someone else's amendment that was supposed to be crafted as a technical amendment. But it seems to me that the way that this is drafted, if you are having a hot lunch program that's self-sustaining, it's part of the denominator, and you get penalized for it. So that's an interesting concept.
Representative Carlson, did you have a point?
Chairman, it also went by pretty quickly for me as well. I'm also interested in that same section where they reference UFARS, and it says direct classroom expenditures, and then as defined under UFARS, either for the author of the original bill or the author of the K-12 finance bill, What about others that have student contact? I'm thinking of librarians, counselors, those folks that have direct student contact but wouldn't necessarily be, in fact, they would typically be on the teacher's salary schedule. They would not be administrative staff, which is what I assume this is trying to define, administrative costs versus classroom.
Representative Sikora.
That's right. I believe they are trying to discern the difference between what is actually spent within the classroom with teachers, special ed, et cetera, versus what is spent outside the classroom.
Well, yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm still not clear with that answer then. I'm talking about staff, licensed teachers typically that would have student contact. So you're saying a librarian or a counselor would not be counted in the 65%?
Representative Sikora.
I think that depends on the time spent with the student. Is that correct? This is all Representative Klingsing's bill, so I will let her continue to explain it.
Representative Klingsing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair of the Committee. There are some librarians who do teach a class, and they would be counted for that class if they're teaching a class, but for the time they're not teaching a class, they usually get appropriated into a different part, into what would be considered the 35% of the budget expenditures and not the 65% of direct classroom.
So, Mr.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, then, if a teacher sends a group of students to the library to research a paper, that librarian is not counted then as what I think I just heard as part of the instructional cost. I think as this bill moves forward and the amendment is on, there ought to be given some thought to some of these folks that are not in the classroom under the strictest definition, but certainly have student contact and are in a what I would at least define as a teaching role. The librarian, the counselor under most circumstances. I think there's quite a difference perhaps between administrative costs and staff that has student contact. I really think that probably should be the definition as opposed to classroom. And you're hearing from a classroom teacher of 34 years. I understand what we mean by classroom, but I also understand the importance of that contact time that support personnel have with students that were of a great assistance to my teaching. I was a social studies teacher, and when I had to have a student do a research project, that librarian was vitally important, and the librarian then under the definition we were just given is not teaching a class per se, but is certainly working with and teaching students.
Representative Klingsing.
Mr. Chair, as a classroom teacher myself, I also find those people extremely important, and that's why I think that it's okay that 35% of the budget is still there to pay for that great support. But I also think that the classroom is the core of the school, and we really need to make sure that at least two-thirds of the dollars are going there, and that we... I'm not supporting getting rid of librarians and counselors. That's not what this does at all. There is still a lot of room in this particular 35% of the budget to spend on librarians and counselors. And there are 25 awesome districts who are already doing this, who have great librarians and great counselors who support their teachers. And they still are able to spend 65% of their money on the classroom.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carlson.
I didn't get into that whole area of fixed cost. I was just trying to define what we mean by a teacher of the classroom. But when we start talking about the other 35%, making it sound like that's totally available, in the dead of winter, I found that it was pretty important to have heat. And I started at 7 in the morning with my first hour class, and in the winter it was often dark, and believe me, it was good to have lights. So heat, lights, building maintenance, there's a lot of things that go into that other 35%, and that Mr. Chairman, Representative Cleansing, is also important to the operation of the school district, and those fixed costs are generally, back when I was on K-12 finance, we would talk, depending on the district, 15 to 20% of the district's costs being fixed in that particular category. So if you take that out, then we're down to 15%, and in that 15%, we put all administration and the people that I was talking about earlier, librarians and counselors and so on. But I'd like to yield to Representative Solbert.
Representative Solbert,
two questions. Is heat in my classroom a direct thing in the classroom? Is that counted as keeping me warm and an expenditure for the classroom under this proposal?
Representative Klingzing, do you have an answer, or Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, Representative Carlson, why don't we see if we can get this further defined so we don't have to spend the whole night on it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I understand that this was got brought up as a technical question, mm-hmm. and it's something that's being promoted by some groups outside of this area that are all of a sudden. And another question I want to ask is, quite frankly, I want to get my kids to school as well. And I know that in some school districts that are compact, they can walk to school or have very small busing. But in my school districts, they go for 2 miles sometimes without picking up a kid. And or Irv's Anderson, they go 20 miles before they pick up a kid. I mean, go up to Togo, Minnesota, and see how far it is between people that with the bus stops. Is that counted as classroom expenditure to get that student to my to the kid, or is that part of the 35%? These are basic questions that nobody thought out, and we offered a technical amendment talking about general food services tonight that caught my attention, and it seems to me also that we've proven in the past that it's important to have breakfast in school. Kids learn better when they have breakfast in school. We have a program in my school that offers breakfast. It's self-sustaining. They'll be penalized by this amendment. So, you know, we may go on to the next one and say, well, we need to think more about it. It seems to me that this is a program that came in late, should have been scuttlebutt and studied about and talked about. What is an expenditure in a classroom? Or isn't heat not important for my kids?
Representative Klingzing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, this is a proposal that's been on the table for 3 years. This is not something that just walked in the back door at the last minute. Secondly, we don't have to do anything about the food service issue. I just thought that it might be something I could work with you on. Third, we did look at transportation. We compared transportation sparse districts to those that don't have sparse transportation issues going on. And we found a number of them were hitting they were in the 65% expenditure to the classroom. So transportation sparsity was not necessarily a factor that was determining whether the districts could or could not meet the 65% threshold in the classroom. Also, a lot of these districts, the 25 that do meet the 65% dollars to the classroom threshold, they have heat, they have lights, they have all the things that are needed to get kids to school, keep them warm, and make sure they have a hot lunch program.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair. I know that the vote has already been taken on this, but I had just begun to read this one, and I wanted to comment the staff development that we're not using the 2% set aside anymore is, I hope members will remember this this amendment when we get around to some of the other amendments that have to do with QComp, because when the Education Committee went to Waseca and looked and talked at teachers down there, we were very impressed with what they were doing. The most important thing that we were impressed with and that made the biggest difference for kids was the staff development. And that's, to me, the best part of QComp. But here, we're not setting aside money for staff development anymore, and then we have the QCOP. But it's kind of, you know, you take away with one hand and give with another. So is staff development important or not? And I think that this kind of says that, that it's not important to this bill, and I think that's a shame because I think that's the best part of what is being done there. So when we get around to other amendments, I hope people will remember what we're doing here.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sikora, just along the same lines of that 65% deal, on page 90 of the bill, lines 14 through 19, I'm not on the Education Committee, so bear with me. What the heck does that mean? And if I read that right, well, I guess I'll ask you what it means first. And I'll ask you, and then just, does that fit in or out of the 65%?
Representative Sikora.
This is, let me quickly read this part. Okay, they're talking about the Educational Improvement Plan and the Alternative Teacher Professional Pay System, how teachers can achieve, and they're talking about what the professional pay system must include, how teachers can achieve career advancement, so that, you know, when they're putting together the plan within the school district, the administration and the union people are agreeing on how they're going to put this together. So there's not a lot. They get to make the most of the detailed decisions in this. There are a few criteria they have to follow. And beyond that, they get to make their decisions.
Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, represents the core and facilitate job-embedded professional development that helps other teachers improve their skills. So I'm curious, what does that mean, and whatever they're being compensated for there, would that be inside or outside of the 65%?
Representative Sikora.
I believe for the most part that would be within the 65%.
So that's within the 65%. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dorn.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kunzing, I just want to make sure I heard correctly. Did you reference that there are currently 25 school districts that do meet the 65% threshold as defined by this language that we've now amended?
Representative Kunzing.
Representative Dorn, that's correct. And I also meant to say before, Representative Sikora did not say this was a technical amendment, but what was pretty technical about it was that the original education omnibus bill had direct classroom expenditures, meaning, and we had left out the words instructional, and we had to put instructional in there really to conform and give some direction with UFARS. So we were referencing UFARS without putting instructional in, and that word needed to be there. And that was something the department called us on to recommend. So that part of it was a technical change to get the definition to work out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I won't take time in the committee, but it would be interesting to see which 25 meet the threshold and which, whatever it would be, about 315 that don't. I don't know how close they are and how they fit. So, but I can work with Representative Kunzing to get that.
Okay, let's move on, Representative Sikora. What's your next amendment? 102 or 104?
104, Mr. Chairman.
104.
And Mr. Crow will explain it. This is the fiscal amendment for the amendments that we're doing tonight.
Who is going to move the 104 amendment?
I'll move 104. Thank you.
Representative Sikora moves the 104 amendment. Representative Sikora.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Crow will explain the fiscal amendment.
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and members, Amendment A-104 has several different fiscal impacts, and I'll go section by section. Or if you start at line 3 through 7, what this does is it caps a school site's compensatory revenue, which currently can max out at about $2,511 per compensatory pupil, caps it at $2,465 per compensatory pupil unit. That provision would reduce the appropriations in the bill by about $2 million. Lines 8 through 12 relate to the operating capital aid levy mix. The primary purpose for having lines 8 through 12 in is to balance this amendment against the target in terms of both aid and levy. What this does for is basically move in fiscal 2007 approximately $3.7 million of levy to operating capital, which has a $3 million aid cost. Then for fiscal 2009 and later, an additional $25 million is added to the operating capital levy, saving state aid in 2009 and later. Then on the section that's the paragraph that's on lines 14 through 16 is a provision that would increase metro region equity for all school districts qualifying for that equity funding by 25%. The current equity program divides the state into rural and metro regions. The metro region and excludes Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth as first-class cities from revenue. This would, for only the metro region, adjust equity revenue by 25% upward for those districts. The districts with lowest referendum amounts generate the most equity revenue. The districts with the highest referendum amounts generate the least. This provision in this paragraph would cost about $6 million in aid. Then at the bottom of page 1, between lines 19 and 24, is an increase in referendum equalization aid. Under current law, the first $500 of a district's voter-approved operating referendum is equalized at what we call the first tier, which is a higher rate of equalization of about 476, using an equalizing factor of $476,000 of referendum market value per pupil unit. The House bill, as it stands, increases that to $600 per pupil unit, resulting in additional aid being paid to districts with referendums between $500 and $600 per pupil. This would extend that equalization aid, ramping it up during fiscal 07 or during fiscal 08 to the first $700 per pupil of a voter-approved operating referendum, and then fiscal 09 to the first $800 per pupil unit of operating referendum. The net effect of this change, there are two types of changes that this results in. One is a straightforward levy to aid swap of districts that have referendums between $500 and $800 per pupil. So there's an aid cost and a levy savings to that component of the change. Then we estimate an additional cost based on a behavioral effect, assuming that districts, because of the higher level of equalization, will be successful in passing additional referendum amounts. The net effect is about $22 million additional levy in fiscal 2008 and 9, and about $20 million in additional aid in fiscal 2008 and 9, for a net effect of about $42 million in additional revenue for fiscal 2008 and 9 for districts. Then on the top of the next page, line one generates $4 million of savings in the general education program by eliminating a provision in the bill that allows districts to count students who arrive from the refugee camps in Thailand through June 1st of this year. Our compensatory revenue is calculated on the second prior year pupil count. So pupils that were not in the district by October 1st of last fall will not generate revenue for this fall. That provision would have allowed districts to count students who arrived from those camps through June 1st as compensatory pupil units starting for revenue next fall. So there was about $4 million of savings from eliminating that provision in the bill. And you see that on your spreadsheet on line 17. And then on lines 2 through 11, most of these changes affect the general education program. So that's a change to the general education appropriation to accommodate these changes. Then on lines 13 through 19, there is currently in the bill a pilot project related to compensatory revenue and the allocation of revenue based on test scores instead of concentrations of poverty at schools. This would provide $2 million per year on a one-time basis to the Anoka-Hennepin District for the purposes of participating in that pilot project. Then on page 148, section 86, there was a provision for one-time pilot related to providing additional funds to districts that met certain criteria. That section is deleted, and the appropriation is deleted on line 23, saving about $1 million. Then on lines 21 and 22 is a reduction in the House bill appropriations for APIB programs from $4.5 million to $3.5 million for a net reduction of $2 million. And lines 24 and 25 is a provision that was in the bill that would have provided $2 million for adult education for refugees for English language. And that section is deleted, and the appropriation is deleted, which saves another $2 million. The approximate net change in the aid in the bill is about $13 million that's reduced and reallocated under this amendment.
Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I really don't feel well tonight, and I'm probably not going to feel any better after I suspect this amendment passes, but Representative Sikora, tell me about line 6, the dollar reduction in compensatory. I'm sure there's some good public policy reason why the number 2,465 is chosen to reduce to, so I'm looking for the explanation of that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher, there is going to be a pilot of looking at another way of looking at compensatory, and that would be looking at AYP and students, you know, funneling it towards students that need help to meet AYP. Some of those will be the same students, but some won't. And this is a special project that will be studied by Anoka-Hennepin District. That's the largest district in the state, and they have a lot of students who are also eligible for compensatory. And so we are funneling some money to them for 2 years to do that pilot, and I think Representative Abler would like to speak to that.
Well,
Representative Kelleher has the floor.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll be very interested to hear what Representative Abler has to say, but I'm really curious. I'm asking specifically about the number chosen for the reduction in compensatory, and Representative Sikora, I'm still not feeling like I'm getting an answer as to why the reduction is happening right there. I believe Mr. Crow said the current amount is 2,511, is that correct? I'm a little foggy today, so I may have not gotten that right. So the reduction is down to 2,465, and I'm just really searching for why that reduction. I mean, I guess you gave me the overall policy reason, but why that particular dollar amount?
Representative Sikora.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher, that's because $1 million is taken from that to put each year to put toward the pilot program.
So
it reduces the total amount.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Sikora, I guess when you funnel, you pick something up from somewhere and you suck it off and drop it somewhere else. And so I'm getting the distinct feeling that this is a sucking sound coming right from the school district I represent and have my children enrolled in Minneapolis, probably Representative Mariani's district in St. Paul. My guess is maybe Representative Huntley's district in Duluth. It gives me the distinct feeling that somebody's getting the bad end of the funnel, and I think I'm it.
Representative Dorman.
Representative Sikora, I just want to make sure I understand this, the implications in this amendment. So we're taking money from Minneapolis and St. Paul, or a district in Red Lake or something, a district that's got high compensatory, and we're taking money away from immigrants from somewhere, and we're taking money away from, what is it, an excellence program of some kind, and we're doing that because your bill before it came here didn't send enough money to the suburban schools on a per pupil basis. So for some reason, poor old Edina and Wayzata, and I just can't believe it. I'm just a little shocked. But let me see if I get that. If that part is right, we need to put more money on a per pupil unit up there, and then out of the blue, in comes a $2 million provision for Anoka-Hennepin. I realize I'm getting a little cynical, but it looks an awful lot like it's possible that, you know, gee, certain folks aren't going to vote for the bill, so let's take some money from them and go out and see if we can get enough votes to get the bill out of committee. I mean, tell me, Representative Sikora, that that's not what's going on here. Because it looks that way, but I'm just a small-town third dealer from Albert Lea, and I realize we've got to keep the 8, 9, 10 foreign language programs available in Edina, and I've heard that elementary orchestras in Jeopardy and Hopkins, and we didn't have enough money in the bill for them.
I heard about enough of you.
Mr. Chairman.
We are going to go through the chair, and we're going to try to keep the personal disputes between members out of this committee room. Representative Sikora.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dorman. This money is not going to any of the other schools. This is going strictly for a pilot program. We had the language in the bill. We neglected to fund that pilot program. So this is going to fund that pilot program somewhat belatedly, but it is going to fund it. And it's high time we took a look at what we do with compensatory and whether or not it should be totally based on poverty or whether there should be some other factors included. This is going to allow a look at another factor.
The next name I have on the list is, if it's on this point, Representative Silver, we'll put you on the list. Mm-hmm. Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm not sure if you remember this, but there is not a project I've worked on longer in my career here than this whole compensatory thing. Many districts have a lot of students that get free and reduced lunch. You remember that some time ago, it went to a logarithmic formula based upon concentration. A district I happen to represent, called Anoka, happens to have very large buildings, bigger than many cities in some of the rural parts of our state, and in fact bigger than many school districts per district. We have one school that's 1,400 kids. Our high schools are in the range of 3,000 students. And for that reason, we have, and in fact, Anoka has 8,800 students that are free reduced. Minneapolis has 27,600, and St. Paul has 28,000. The challenge is that some of those kids have exactly the same needs as other kids do. But it's not funded by students. It's based on concentration. And just for instance, the average child in the Anoka district gets $109 per child for compensatory. The average student in Minneapolis gets $1,339 per child for compensatory, just because of the concentration factor. Nothing to do with their challenges in their life, nothing to do with their ability or their family situation, nothing to do with anything. Anoka district has, I believe, the two lobbyists were arguing who had more languages in their district, not to try to see who has harder students or the challenges, and the challenges are great for all. But Anoka has more than 51 languages in its district. And so the challenge is how do you find a way? And where the money came from specifically had to do with remember, it's a logarithmic scale. And so if you have a school with a few kids in it, you get hardly any money. And if you have a school with more concentration, you get more money. The range goes up to $2,511 per child when you get to the very top of the logarithmic chart. And so for reasons solely except that maybe a couple kids move from one school to another, there's a significant change in the funding of those very top marginal students. And I no harm intended, and I meant to talk to Gibson and tell her, especially. I just didn't get time today. I apologize for that. And Carlos. Mr. Chair, I'm still speaking. So what this represents is a 2% reduction in the very top kids.
In terms of 2511 on 2465, that's where the number came from. It wasn't just, and it's, so that's, and so what this will do is maybe find a way to better serve some of these kids. ANOCA is of the opinion that it can find some ways to meet AYP with some of these extra monies and expand and export those ideas to other schools that have these same challenges. And there's many places that have, the compensatory argument is not anything new, and so that's where it came from, just so you know. Except for the homework part, it's a good idea.
Representative Kamer. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to digest this, and I think what I am understanding is that in Minneapolis schools, in terms of money outcomes, the schools that have 80% of poverty, where the 80% of the students have poverty, money will be taken from those schools. I think there is a very wise tire dealer among us who probably understands this better than I do, but I do want to ask you specifically what outcomes educationally do you expect from this change and all of these changes, the English language, this change? How does this fit No Child Left Behind? What are the educational outcomes?
Representative, Mr. Chairman. This is a pilot to see if we can address it by looking at children with regard to educational needs rather than just poverty. So if ANOCA in that pilot program will be targeting kids who are low performers, not necessarily poverty, but low performers who need extra help. So it'll be addressed toward the students who need the help.
Representative Wagenius.
What I was asking about was the cut. What do you expect to be the outcomes to your various piles, folks that you have cut, so that the schools in Minneapolis or another district that have 80% poverty, what do you expect to be the educational outcomes from your change?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I wouldn't expect that there would be a great deal of outcome. First of all, what you're talking about is concentrations, and that money is given to those students and put out to those schools just because, purely because there's more of a concentration. If you have a much larger school site, you may not be able to achieve the same concentration a smaller school can. And I know that Minneapolis has many schools and can achieve high concentrations in certain schools and therefore is eligible for very high levels at that $2,500 level.
Representative Wagenius.
You used the word achieve as that was something that we were aiming for.
Mm-hmm.
I think we best look for another word there. I don't think that's something that my school district looks to achieve. Achieve small schools with high concentrations of poverty. I don't think that's an outcome that my school district is looking for. It's a circumstance my school district deals with, not something that they're looking to achieve. I think there's a tire dealer that's awfully smart over there.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm wondering if Representative Abler or Representative Sikora could tell me if ANOCA Hennepin has been consulted about this pilot, and if so, what did they say?
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, this has been a proposal for 2 years. I don't think they're here tonight because they have a board meeting. This has, if you remember when it first came, one of my first projects I did, and I got 35 signatures as a freshman on a bill to try to solve this problem. We got, I think, a $2 million grant at that time to handle the compensatory disparities. This is a long-standing challenge. ANOCA happens to be one of the outliers when the reform happened, when you went from what was the, whatever they're counted before to free and reduced. Whenever that was, AFTC counts to free and reduced. And they tried to fix it, and then it got rolled into 415, and it all went away. And so the struggles remain. We have some kids, we have some schools, that you would not think in a town like Anoka would be a high poverty school, but it's amazing, but it's not enough to trigger this thing. And I do need to apologize. I didn't see this run until now. And so, you know how I function. If I would have known this run, I would have had some conversations and maybe try to find a different pot of money. But nonetheless, the challenge goes on, and so I'm trying to be candid about that part. But this is not a new thing. If you look back in my bills, I don't remember the number, but it was 1999. I had a project. Last year, this was on the omnibus, leaving the house. We didn't have it. Is that the one we didn't get? In terms of trying to reallocate the money. And so, given some of the challenges of our district and some of the other leanness and budgets that we've struggled with for a good long time, Anoka has consistently been below the state average in its funding. And we try to move the money around, and this was an effort to try to find a way to rescue some of these children and give them the opportunity to succeed that they would deserve. And this bill's a long ways to go. Its conference is going to come off, and I would expect that the funding source may change, but I think the idea is very good, and it needs to go forward today.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Abler, you're missing my question. I wasn't wondering where this proposal came from. I meant, how does Anoka Hennepin feel about taking it from this list of very districts with very poor students in a concentrated fashion? Have they been asked about that?
Okay. Representative Abler.
Mr. I don't know that Anoka's, as I was unaware until I saw this list. I don't think Anoka's specifically aware where the money comes from. I think they're glad to have a chance to try to serve these children. And they are not specifically aware of this source, and they just know that we're able to find some money.
Okay. Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, you may recall, and I think a lot of us involved in the Education Committee recall, maybe even other people recall too, metropolitan districts universally reject money if it's coming from this source.
Is that a question, Representative Greiling? Representative Clark.
No. But, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment for later, if I can be back on the list.
We have an amendment to the amendment, Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair, I do.
You want to present it at this time, or do you want to go through?
It's unrelated to the Anoka Hennepin project, but it is related to this. It's an amendment to this amendment. So maybe we could pass it out, and then I could...
Well,
if other people want to talk about this particular project, I could wait. Otherwise, I could do it now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay. We have 8 other people on the list.
I'll go on the
Clark,
list, and then
Stolberg, Walker, Kelleher, Mariani, Dorman, Greiling, Carlson. So, Representative Clark.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I did have, I guess, the same question that we're all of us are asking, whose school districts are being... Yes. Why is it coming out of the poorest of the poor? Why isn't it coming out of some of the school districts?
Representative Sikora.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I couldn't hear her. My question is, why is this money to do a pilot project in a district that may have a good idea? Why is it coming from the poorest of the poor schools rather than from some of the wealthier school districts? Why have you chosen to take it from the poorest of the poor? Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, first of all, there's $265 million a year spent in compensatory. This is a very tiny, tiny piece of it. Secondly, we are dealing with kids who normally get compensatory and trying to do a program that will show another way of using compensatory and possibly have some positive results. I am hoping we are going to see some really good results from this program. Mr. Chair?
Representative Clark.
But I'd like an answer to my question. I'm not interested in just what you're trying to do. I want to know why you're taking it from the source you're taking it from. Is that all of Red Lake schools, 6 schools? You know, goodness sakes, it seems that would be one of the last places you'd want to take money from. And 55 Minneapolis schools, I've counted, and it looks like about the same St. Paul. Over half $1 million in Minneapolis, close to that in St. Paul. Those 6 Red Lake schools, $76,000. Why would you propose to take it from them rather than from a different source. That's my ongoing question.
Representative
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I believe the city of Minneapolis, I believe the school district gets about $11,200 per student. You are fairly well funded. You know, there's a lot of money spent in compensatory. This is a tiny, tiny piece. I'm amazed that, first of all, I did not see this run, and I didn't realize it was all coming from Minneapolis or St. Paul. I really didn't realize that, but that is the way it worked out. And I guess that's because you get the very large dollars. The rich districts that you're talking about probably aren't getting this money. So that's probably why it's coming more from you than from some rich district who doesn't get any of it.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
Do you deny the basis for why compensatory care is here in the first place? I mean, did some lawsuits and a few other things that I think dealt with some of our issues around the concentration of very low-income people, the most segregated, racially segregated, poor districts in the, I think in the country, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And again, I just don't understand why you'd be hitting the poorest of the poor. We need every dollar we have in our school districts, and it just seems to me you should be looking elsewhere to take the dollars. I haven't heard a good reason for it, other than that it's there, and so therefore you can take it.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, I think tonight when the chair of the Education Finance Committee said she hasn't seen a run yet on this, and I think...
I saw it tonight, Mr. Chairman.
But the education bill has been being worked on for a long, long time. And I think, Representative Aber, you're on the Education Committee, are you not?
Not on finance.
Mr. Chairman, you're closer to a proposal than I am on a proposal, and it's been around for 3 years. It seems kind of strange that in Ways and Means, I know we're doing this all the time, but taking from, again, I would say the poorest of the poor, and I think when this run comes out and we see we're taking $76,000 away from Red Lake School District, to give to a pilot project for No Child Left Behind, Representative Segrin, to help fund a No Child Left Behind program. So we're taking it from Red Lake, poorest of the poor, to give to Representative President Bush's No Child Left Behind, a pilot project. And I would think, I don't know the buildings in my school district, Grand Rapids, but I would suspect that it's Squaw Lake, and a couple other ones that are Big Fork, where poverty is very, very highly concentrated. And probably, well, Togo doesn't have a school anymore. They have to drive 40 miles to get to their school. It seems kind of strange. I would think that there should be another way to be able to fund $2 million. Maybe if it's such an important thing, we could even increase income tax $2 million statewide so we could fund a No Child Left Behind project instead of taking it from Red Lake.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, Red Lake gets $14,600 per student. That is, you know, more money than just about anybody gets as far as education. So I think maybe you're barking up the wrong tree here saying they don't get enough money. What we're trying to figure out is there a better way, because we're not seeing fabulous results from what we do now. So we're using a very small amount of money to see if there's another way we might improve results. Anoka Hennepin will have to try and show how they can improve results, focusing that aid in a different manner.
Mr. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, maybe Red Lake could have used the $2 million to try to get some better results. And Representative Cora, I grew up about 25 miles from Red Lake School District. I want anybody in this school district to want to inherit their problems.
Well, my maiden voyage as chair of this committee is not going smoothly. Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sikora, Representative Clark started on this path, but I need some clarification on how we got this money in the first place. I believe it was a lawsuit, but I'm not very clear. And if it was, it would have been right about this time I graduated high school. So I just need some clarity on how we got this pot of money in the first place.
Representative Walker, you might be referring to the integration aid.
No, well,
the integration aid, I think, was more the result of a lawsuit.
Okay, can you tell me, Mr. Chair, Representative Sikora, how we got these particular dollars? Do you know any information around this?
Compensatory, we have had, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Compensatory has been in place for a while. It's been growing at quite a large rate. In 2000, it grew 10%. In 2001, it grew much smaller than that. That's because the funding year is 2000. Okay. 2002, it grew 2.6%, and 2003, it grew 19.4%. So,
Mr. Chair,
we have been growing compensatory as a way to help the poor districts or the concentrations for quite a long time.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not asking for the growth. I'm asking for how it started. And if I'm not sure if you can answer it, if there's a senior member here on the committee or a staff person, someone has to know where we got this money in the first place. Where it came for, what was the purpose of it, what were the initial outcomes.
Mr. Crow, do you want to take a chance at answering the question?
It started apparently, Mr. Chairman, in the 1980s, that we started doing compensatory in this way, and then we adjusted it for the way we did it starting in about 1997, and that's probably when we got the greater densities.
But
Representative Walker.
You've been here longer than I have.
Representative Kelleher.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Oh, we still have a question, Representative Walker?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I thought they were kind of looking like they were going to answer the question further, and I just wanted to make sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, Tim Strom from House Research. Compensatory revenue has been a part of the school funding formula since the early 1980s. Back in the 80s, the funding was primarily through a program called the Total Pupil Units Program. In 1987, compensatory revenue became part of the general education program, and at that time, it was funded on the AFDC count in each school district. When AFDC as a measure was eliminated in 1997, the count became based at the site level on the number of free and reduced lunch students at each school site. It's been in that same shape since 1997, where each free and each reduced lunch student is counted at the site. We calculate a percentage and multiply that percentage by the formula allowance to determine the amount of money that's generated at each site. It's what's called a concentration formula, so the higher the percentage at any given site, the more money each of the free or reduced lunch eligible students generates. So that's a short history of the parameters of the compensatory program.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strom, can you tell me why was concentration initially looked at as a factor?
Mr. Chair, Representative Walker, the concentration part of the formula has been with the formula for about 20 years. The theoretical underpinnings of that are that if there's one or two children from low socioeconomic status in a school classroom, that the impact on that classroom will not be that severe. If there are 15 or 18 or 20 out of that 22 or 24 students, the impact is presumed to be much greater. So that's the rationale behind having a concentration formula.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a couple of things that strike me. The word that Representative Sikora said earlier as it relates to my school district achieving concentration. Outside of going to community-based schools, and giving parents options of not even having to send their child there. But the differences of when my brothers and sisters grew up, in my neighborhood, for example, we had Worthington and Bryant Junior High and Central High School, and my mother, who has never drove a day in her life, was able to walk to the schools and check on my siblings whenever she felt like it without notice. And when no schools left, there was a hole in my neighborhood as it relates to people feeling like they belong. To this day, in Minneapolis, District 61 is the only district that doesn't have a Minneapolis public high school. And there's a hole. District 61, the entire district, is the only one that does not have a school, and the hole that it has for our community. I say all this because there's been a change going back to community base. People have a feeling of belonging. You know what school your child is most likely to go to. When Green Elementary came back, it used to be a high school that my dad went to, my aunt, all my brothers and sisters. I'm the only one that didn't have an opportunity to go. My son went there. And when he started there in first grade, it was still very diverse. But by the time he left in eighth grade, you got to see a change as it relates to languages. And just to note, Representative Abler, I understand your struggle of dealing with 50-plus languages. Minneapolis is dealing with 90. And since then, my son's a senior, so 4 years later, if you go to Green Central right now, more than 50% of the children have English as a second language. Now imagine for yourself as a teacher going into a classroom knowing that you're not just dealing with children that have a second language as their first, or have English as their second language, but then dealing with individuals that not only are poor and struggling, but have maybe moved around. They're unfortunately in this one particular part of my neighborhood. May have been a gunshot the night before. There may have been some type of walking by your house, walking by your to get to your school bus. Might have seen a prostitute. Might have seen a gang member. Might have seen a drug dealer. And guess what? In fifth grade, you still made it to school. Not just you. Not just one of your peers, but several of your peers. And might have ended when you finally got to school, you were thankful that they had school breakfast because you didn't have enough money. Your mom didn't have enough money at home because she's only making $7 an hour. She's working, but doesn't have enough money to pay the $800 rent for two bedrooms. Now, this child gets breakfast, but that's not the only child that gets breakfast. It's peer in the room. It's the next student. It's the next student. So then there might have been a student that came in there that missed the bus, so missed breakfast that morning, so is still hungry and waiting for lunch and didn't get breakfast at home. And so you got a teacher who's dealing with several students that don't speak English as a first language. You got a couple students that are hungry. You got a couple students that their mom didn't have enough money to wash their clothes, so they had to come to school smelling because their clothes were dirty. You have another student that ended up sleeping on their cousin's couch because their mother just got evicted. There is a huge difference between having a couple students in a classroom with some serious issues that we need to address versus having 10 to 15, and we didn't even discuss behavior issues of special ed. We just discussed the difficulties that in one of my schools, that it's not uncommon to go into not one of the classrooms, but several of them to have this issue. There's a student that's in ninth grade that got into the IB program at Southwest High this year. She graduated from Green. Smart girl. What we found out in ninth grade was she's not ready. She was behind her peers in math. Is it that she wasn't smart? No. But because her eighth grade teacher had to deal with so many other issues in her math class, she never got a chance to get through the entire book. So she's automatically behind her peers in the IB program, and thankfully she has a mother who knows how to get resources to help her child get ahead and to make sure that she's able to stay up with her peers. Was able to get in the IB program, would have been able to be fine and been taking geometry, but her classmates in eighth grade had special circumstances that kept her from that. I just think that, you know, things is going to happen the way that they're going to happen, and, it's difficult sometimes for me because I come here with a statewide approach. I represent District 61B. I don't spend 100% of my time in South Minneapolis. I enjoy talking to the children, especially across the state, whether I'm in Faribault, Upsala, and I make it to your school districts, whether you know it or not. I love the children in Minnesota. I don't think it's right to be taking it as Representative Abler said, reallocating and moving around. We need to just be honest and say we're taking it. And unfortunately, because we have our hands tied and we're being so stubborn as it relates to dealing with taxes and moving ahead, that we got to take money that we know will benefit children. And we can say that Minneapolis gets more dollars to the head. But you come and teach a class in Minneapolis, in one of the schools, in near south or near north, and you tell me if you can handle a month, 1 month, one week. You tell me if you can handle making sure that whatever the assignments were for that week, that those 23 third graders, and you'll be lucky if you only have 23, but those 23 third graders are able to learn everything that they're supposed to learn that particular week on your watch. I bet you you'll find out the difficulties that you say that we have in making sure that we have the outcomes that the state keeps putting on without making sure that we are truly understanding the differences are doing damage. And to look at Anoka Hennepin as a pilot is wonderful. It's wonderful because they're not going to be the only school district that where we have increases of students of color and poverty going in. It's going to be happening more everywhere because our wages don't meet up with our housing needs in the first place. But doing that and without respecting and looking at particular schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul and looking at why they have had difficulties in fulfilling their outcomes is also doing an injustice.
Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking for Representative Abler, and I don't know if he's still in the room or if he's behind Mr. Crow.
Representative Abler, Representative Kelleher has a question. Representative Kelleher.
Representative Abler, I'm wondering if you remember our conversation on the floor after we did the budget resolution and your speech on the House floor.
Mr. Chair, maybe that's not going to refresh my memory what she's referring to.
I believe you rose, and I'm sorry to do this today, but you made a comment that you're sorry you didn't talk to folks from Minneapolis about this amendment or folks from St. Paul or folks from anywhere else that are affected by the amendment. So I'm sorry you didn't either, because we're going to have a conversation about it tonight. No, Representative Abler, you rose to speak on the House floor on the budget targets, talking about how you were going to get more money, a little bit more money. Well, if this is your idea of how you go off and get more money, I'm sorry. I don't agree at all. You know what, Representative Sikora? Yes, these places do get more money on compensatory funding. But you know what, Representative Sikora? And you know this. You have grandchildren. I know that in the Minneapolis public schools. They happen to be in a school that has a low level of concentration of poverty, lower than even the school that my children are in. But I will tell you something. I don't think that the idea here today or the idea at any time in this legislature should be to steal from one to give to another. It really makes me angry. And I know it's coming on the tax bill. I know it's coming on this bill, but it doesn't make me any happier today, Representative Abler. It doesn't make me any prouder to be a legislator, and it makes me very angry when you make this throwaway comment about how maybe you should have talked to us today. Well, I was on the floor all day today. Like I said, I was sitting there. You never approached. You never talked. You never said anything. I just find it appalling that the situation we're in, when we are in one of the wealthiest states in the whole country, one of the wealthiest states, one of the states with the most growing income per capita, that what we've decided to do here today, it's not that the goal is wrong. I don't think the goal is wrong to look at other ways to solve this problem of how we raise kids up. How do we help kids achieve? We may have differences of opinion about No Child Left Behind here, but we certainly do have to live under it, right? So I'm not even picking on your reason for doing it, but I sure the heck am going to pick on your reason of where you're taking it from. This is not easy work. This is not easy work at all to get these kids up to speed. And when you have a classroom that has serious issues, and it's not just Minneapolis, but we're going to fight for Minneapolis tonight. You'd want to fight for your school district, right? Members around this table? I think it's horrific what we're doing tonight. And, Mr. Chairman, it's not your fault. You're doing a great job running the meeting, but I always forget how awful this bill gets in this committee, how it becomes one against the other. It's not about the kids. That's a bunch of crud to say it's about the kids. If it were about the kids, we'd be finding a way to find revenue across this state that made this more equal, that kept up with the true cost, instructional cost, of doing what our teachers try to do every day, that would try to help us live up to this national law of No Child Left Behind. We'd be doing that all together. But no, now we're in a fight. We're in a fight here tonight. We're in a fight about the poorest of the poor. And, you know, everybody can sit back and watch. And you know what? I think the other thing is, I really hate that we have to have this fight about pitting one school district against another. I just think that is about the worst politics we can play. I don't know why this is necessary right now. I think it'd be healthier if you withdrew the amendment. We could figure out something else. But that won't happen because the politics of this seem too tempting, I guess. Representative Abler, after that discussion on the House floor, you and I had a pretty interesting discussion as classmates. And now I think you're remembering it. And I'm just disappointed. I'm really disappointed tonight.
We will go out of order because Representative Abler was mentioned by Representative Kelleher. Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And it was a throwaway statement, but I didn't mean any less by the throwaway ad hoc, whatever, nature of saying, I wish I would have spoken to, because you came to mind in particular. I didn't have a copy of the amendment to show you, and it just time got away. It's not my customary style. My thinking was, stay in the same categorical, take the very highest of the highest of the high in terms of the resources. I did not see the run, and that was the thought of it. And the thought is, how do we make this thing work better? That was the intention all along with the deal. And I've been, if you haven't seen me screwing around, I've been trying to find a better way to make this go a little more better, to accomplish the end. Because the end, at the end of the day, of the kids that you serve and these kids in the high concentration parts is exactly my end as well. These kids all need a chance to be as good as they can be. And I thought it took a little bit, and it turns out the money is being taken, as we said, are very marginal dollars. They're small pots of money, which is the only redeeming thing about any of these runs, is that they're all tiny in terms of the grand scheme of the dollars we spend here. But still hoping that somehow we could find a way to make these limited dollars go in a way that's better. And my district has spent a good deal of time trying to find ways to deal with these groups. They've got some of the same programs you have, and I've not made a habit of doing this kind of work, and so that's all I can tell you. And the discussion that we had after the meeting on the floor, I just remember part of it, is that that we would take some money out of the shift, and that there would be a way to just to get through this time. I don't really like the targets much better than you do. I do understand the reality is that we've been given some constraints, and they're not constraints from, they're constraints based upon who holds the veto pen and who doesn't. I don't hold the veto pen. But I also understand that we have to make the system work as best as it can. And maybe when 2 years goes by, if we don't get found a better way, and I'm trying to, a note came, maybe they found a better way. So but maybe at the end of 2 years, having lived through this not very pleasant evening on the chair's first engagement as the chair of this committee, we'll look back and think that there was something that came out of this that really will help your kids do better and my kids do better too. That's my raw intent in this. And so that's the best thing to you. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, Representative Kelleher, you almost got it right. It's not really one school against another that we're pitting here. It's one kid against another that we're pitting here. And I'm looking at this list, Representative Abler, and I don't know which one of these schools is losing $72,000. I don't know my schools by numbers. But my guess is that it's either Maxfield Elementary, which is in the heart of the old Rondo African-American community, or maybe the Bruce Ventel School over on the east side, which is probably 98% kids of color, easily over half of them, immigrant children. And, you know, perhaps you and the others who may wind up voting for this might want to come visit with me at the school and maybe tell those kids that, you know, $72,000 is just a small amount, and maybe help explain, you know, to the good people that run that school that this is an important reform measure that we need to do in order to figure out how to do things right. Representative Sakura, you and I have served on committees for a long time, and I can remember back in the Early Childhood Committee when then-Representative Tim Pawlenty had a pretty neat pilot idea. Representative Pawlenty didn't come into our committee asking us for $2 million to take out of somewhere else. He asked for brand-new money. Brand-new money. And we thought he had a pretty good early childhood idea, and we wound up helping then-Representative Pawlenty to fund a pretty good early childhood pilot initiative idea. And I'm sure he probably went out and campaigned on that wonderful project with the new money that we found that we put in into that effort. And, you know, it is really sad, members, that, you know, we've gotten ourselves to the point where we think we're such a small people that, you know, the only way to do anything is just to take it away from somebody else as opposed to doing what then-Representative Pawlenty properly did, which is he came to us and he asked us for brand-new money. So, yeah, I'm going to ask about those, Representative Paymar. Thank you. I just wanted to make my comments here. Representative, a couple of questions. The on the top of the second page of the amendment refers to page 54, section 60. Can you tell me, this is a section that has to do with compensatory revenue for refugees from the Wat Krabok refugee camp in Thailand. I believe that's the refugee camp that Mayor Kelly went to visit in a bipartisan manner with folks from Senator Coleman's office and others, and assured those kids there, because I know some of my school district people went on that trip, that we would do our best to make sure that those children would get a good education. I wonder if you could tell me how many children are going to be are expected to be impacted, or how many children are we expecting from that refugee camp that we're not going to count here?
Representative Sakura.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how many children we expect, and I don't think very many have arrived at this point in time.
Representative Mariani.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Sakura, you know, it's really important that we find out before we put forward. That's kind of interesting that we would we'd have a fiscal note on this enough to figure out that we're going to come up with, I think Mr. Krause said $4 million. I'm told that it's 1,000 kids. And, you know, maybe members of this committee might want to come and visit with me in the Hmong community, and we could tell those 1,000 kids that, you know, that a pilot project somewhere else is more important than keeping that promise that Senator Coleman and Mayor Kelly made. Representative Sakura, on the same page down on line, I think it's 25, page 220, that I guess is supposed to come up with $2 million, and that's for the intensive English language for adult refugees. I'm wondering if you or Mr. Crow could tell me how many adults are going to be impacted by that from us backing away from that promise in this bill.
Mr. Crow, Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, I will run up to my office and grab that budget page. I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Sakura, do you have the number?
Mr. Chairman, what I'm going to suggest is I find a new source of funding for the compensatory pilot. I can't do it right this minute. I will have to look back in the bill and see what can be squeezed out. But I will find a different source of funding for the compensatory pilot by the time we get to the floor, or there won't be a pilot. One of the two.
Representative Sakura and Representative Abler.
I'll lay it over for a little while and try to find it.
Representative Sakura, Representative Abler, and members, particularly my friends on the DFL side of the table. I have been concerned for years about doing major amendments like this in this committee. There are a number of other amendments that probably will generate some controversy, but less controversy than this. My very strong suggestion is that we try to work through as many of those amendments as possible. We give Representative Sikora, Representative Abler, and staff an opportunity to work on whatever. And then it either comes back or it doesn't. We either get done by midnight or we don't. But I certainly wanted to give every member every opportunity to express their view on this as possible. Representative Silver.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that's a good suggestion, but I would also suggest to Representative Sikora and staff that we try to deal with those pages or lines that Representative Mariani just kind of addressed as well. Because one of the things that we always want that was a huge benefit for the refugees that came to the Iron Range and became hard workers was the ability of the adults to learn English. And I would think that we would want that program restored as well with some other. So I would hope that not only the compensatory thing and the pilot project, but also some of the other things that are associated with this supposedly technical amendment are addressed.
We're going to lay over the 104 amendment. Representative Sikora.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, I will try to find a different source of funding for the compensatory pilot. However, I noticed the Senate did not fund either of the refugee issues either in their bill, and so I didn't feel as guilty taking it from that source because, as much as I hated to do it, I had another need that had to be met. And if the Senate wasn't doing it, you know, that it didn't seem like it was a big guilt trip for me not to do it.
We're going to let you do your work, Representative Cora. Representative Vandeveer.
Well, Mr. Chair and Chair Sikora, I don't have as big a problem with this as some people do. I hear all the hand-wringing over there, but I recall when Representative Rukavina's favorite governor, Arne Carlson, was here, and Auditor Dutcher did an audit on compensatory. Those schools had no idea where that money was going. So I don't think this is quite as sacred and a sad choice as, I guess, some of the other members. But
members, we are going to move on to another amendment and another topic. Representative Sikora, do you want to move the 102 amendment? The 102 amendment is really a technical amendment, Representative Sikora.
You're right. It's definitely technical, and now that I see it, I remember it. It's there was some question when the QComp money was doled out that we be careful to make sure that all parts of the state had an opportunity. So this just asked the commissioner to look at the geographic regions and try to make sure that there are some QComp programs for each of those areas, depending, of course, on the applications.
Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Grayley.
Members, I would agree this is a technical amendment, and this reflects the gist of what we talked about in committee.
As many as are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. The A75 amendment. Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The A75 amendment is, for members who are on education finance, is a piece of legislation that was brought forward by Representative Demmer. This is an agreement between the High School League and the state auditor. Right now, current law mandates that the state auditor must audit the High School League revenues and expenditures. The auditor, High School League, have worked out a deal, and it was non-controversial, and I'd appreciate your support.
Representative Grayley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, is this identical to the bill that was non-controversial in committee?
Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grayley, I believe it is, and I've had Representative Demmer look through it, and he said, yes, this was my bill.
Okay, then, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, members, we did have the state auditor. This changed a lot. When we first had it introduced in committee, it was nothing I would have supported and nothing that Auditor Anderson's office would have supported either. But this, if this is what we changed it to in committee, or what it was changed to after they agreed on it, then it is truly a compromise and a non-controversial.
Any further discussion?
I'm sure she's okay. Just don't tell her.
You know, Representative Stolberg, remember the night that I threw quarter when the deputy of the Department of Veterans Affairs after the State Department's division had fired the commissioner? Don't call his boss. As many as are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion does prevail. Amendment is adopted. A61, Hamilton. Representative Hamilton moves the A61 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. An overview of this amendment. There is a residential program down in the city of Worthington, which is set up for individuals with disabilities, for children with disabilities, and it's in conjunction with the school district and then also with the Health and Human Services. The issue that we have right now is keeping the beds full. There are a number of students from around the state. I believe there's five that are from Hennepin County. The problem is we're not able to attract new individuals or bring new people into new students into this residential program. And so we have one or two options, either close the doors or be able to have the amendment, which you have in front of you, to where we can keep people there over 21 years of age. And so I ask for your support on this amendment.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, what age are you looking for as it relates to the child foster care?
Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Walker, for the child care programs, it's from 5 to 21 years of age is the way that it's set up. Right now, if you take a look at the demographics, 14 of the 20 beds are filled. 10 of the 14 are currently full-time students, and next year only 8 of the 14 will be students. The rest will be adults. So that's why we're looking for this amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, have you talked to someone from the department? And in particular, are you familiar with, as it relates to involuntary stay of children into residential facilities?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Walker, what we ended up doing is we had members of the Worthington School District. We met with the governor's office, Senator Vickerman, who's senator of that area, also a member of the Department of Education and Department of Human Services, and there was one other gentleman there that represented the workers of these facilities to take a look at what options do we have. And this is a great program. We want to keep this program in place. Like I said, the individuals that are over 21 years of age now, one of two options, either allow them to stay there, as is currently with the rule change. Otherwise, we're going to have to have them move out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, would these children be are you looking at children without disabilities also qualifying for these beds?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Walker. This is designated for individuals with disabilities. The primary focus of this program is serving students with developmental congenitive disabilities, autism, and other related conditions. That's the way the program is set up.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't been down to the site. I'm trying to figure out how it's set up. How would the children be separated from the adults?
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Walker, there's a number of different facilities. I believe there's five houses. And so they could separate the adults from the children by putting them in a separate house.
Representative Walker.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Hamilton. Dealing with anything as it relates to children in residential settings worries me, whether they have disabilities or not, especially if they're not necessarily currently licensed to do this. I guess instead of me keeping the committee hostage on this particular issue, I guess I'd be interested in knowing who you've been working with. If you can get me the names before we go to the floor from the department so I can get my questions answered as it relates to my concerns. I'm wondering if it would be set up how traditional group homes and things of that are set up, or more like the pilot projects. I can't really call, well, can call them pilot because Synergy is closed now. We had something similar for children at Synergy that we ended up having to close because we just could not deal with, have enough children maintained considering the current laws that we deal with when it comes to children.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Walker, I'd be happy to. You can start first with my Senator Vickerman. This is his language. Came over from the Senate, so he was part of that. As far as from the departments, the Commissioner of both Education and of Health was in that meeting.
Not Human Service? Because this stuff would be under Human Service.
Human Service. You mean Human Service?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Representative Walker. Human Services, you're correct.
Representative Bradley.
I'll pass.
Any further discussion? Many are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dempsey moves the A71 amendment. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is an amendment that is easily understood. The city wants to levy. It doesn't cost the state any money in regard to that, and they will use it for a debt that they have, and the superintendent is working very diligently to get the school district out of debt on this particular situation. So I certainly appreciate your vote of a yes vote on this particular amendment.
Any discussion? Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Finke is in here, and oh, there he is. I didn't see you, Representative Finke, and veiled your levy freezes tonight in the tax bill, and this came through your, when this bill came through your committee, we didn't discuss this. I'm just wondering what your opinion of this is, Chair Krinke.
Representative Krinke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, this is a school district levy and wouldn't be affected by the language that's in the delete all amendment in front of the tax committee.
Representative
Krinke, one of your arguments tonight in the tax committee was that all those levies in this bill were subject to a reverse referendum. Is this one subject to that?
Representative Krinke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rukavina, I never made the argument that school district referendum were subject to, or school district levies were subject to reverse referendum. In fact, most of the levy referendums that are in this, or additional levies that are in this bill, you can ask Representative Sikora, but I don't believe, I believe there's only one that's subject to reverse referendum.
Any further discussion? Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dempsey, is this ice arena owned by the school?
Representative Dempsey.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and they received money to build the facility from the Indian tribe in the school district, and this is money that hasn't been paid to eliminate the debt that the local school district has, and the new superintendent, as I said, wants to solve the problem, to be quite frank with you, and he needs just permission to do so. So,
Mr. Chairman, I support this, but I'm wondering how this relates to the 35% then. is this with the school district owning the arena and the costs associated with that, does that become a problem for the 35%? But that's probably a question you want to ask somebody else. For the 35-65.
Any further discussion? Many are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Biskins offers the A-80 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, in the bill there is the creation of a concept called educational administrative districts, and the purpose behind the educational administrative districts is to help look for cost efficiencies amongst school districts, and the language allows school districts to come together to make agreements that look at administrative efficiencies. I think Representative Heidverken smiled when this was brought before the Education Committee because he knows I'm an administrator and he thinks any time they can downsize administration, it's probably a good thing. So he had fun with that. But members in Tax Committee, Representative Rukavina brought forward an amendment with a sincere concern that union jobs not be railroaded or run over because of these, looking at these efficiencies. And that was not the intent of the author of the bill, which was Representative Eastland. And so working with Representative Rukavina, working with Representative Eastland, working also with members from AFSCME, we believe that we have some language that everyone can live with as we move forward. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a small oral amendment.
State your small oral amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, on page 1, line 11, strike the word consistent and insert in compliance. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to incorporate that.
I will make sure that the clerk gets the amendment to the amendment that's been incorporated. Any further discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Chair, I represent Biskins talking about this today, and Representative Easton called me over the weekend, and we've worked with AFSCME and the SEIU that have concerns, and I think this meets it, so I don't have any problem with it.
As Representative Stolberg.
Mr. Chair, the author yield to line 15 and 16, where you're deleting exclusive representative written consent. I understand you're bringing them into the process, but usually you do have a written document in line. Why are we deleting that? Can you...
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, the words with exclusive representative written consent actually goes above and beyond current law, which says that when efficiencies are looked at, which could affect the members of an exclusive bargaining unit, that must become part of negotiations. The school district can't just unilaterally do that. But when you add the words with written consent, what you're actually doing is giving the exclusive representative veto authority, which goes above and beyond what current law is. It's not my intent to change current law on either side, not to railroad union members, but then not to greatly expand their authority either. Okay, so that's the reason.
Spendies are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Bradley moves the A-77 amendment. Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This proposes to strike a section which apparently was added in the Tax Committee. And what it amounts to is that if you understand, if you're providing insurance for any group, that you typically try to prevent adverse selection. And that can happen if you have, you usually have some sort of a contract. And in this case, the service cooperatives actually negotiate for a 5-year. And people can leave at any time they wish. That's no problem. However, as is fairly typical, if they leave, then they can't return for 2 years. That's sort of typical, so that people don't go out and sort of shop around and get a temporary good deal, which a year later turns out to be because somebody low bids. then they come back and a year later really raise their prices significantly. This is kind of the nature of the insurance marketplace. I think Representative Biskin is familiar. I believe that Representative Davis, who was one of the people originally sponsoring this, recognized that this was not the way it should have been, and this was not the intent. So I think he was comfortable with it being removed, and that's why I would recommend it to the committee.
Representative Greiley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know that Representative Dabney worked on this amendment, and he was aware that this amendment was coming forward to remove it, and he was actually not comfortable with it being removed. And he explained that the reason that he was interested in this being in the education bill and had the amendment in the tax committee was so that districts that wanted to explore getting alternate bids would not be punished if they would decide to come back. And when we're trying to keep cost of health insurance as low as possible, it seems to me we should be wanting competition and wanting districts to be checking out alternative places where they might be able to get cheaper health insurance. And if we're trying to have districts have more and more percentages of their funds going to instructional costs, then we should want less money going into health insurance and some of those non-instructional costs. So I would oppose removing this section on behalf of Representative Dabney for his reasons that I just stated.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could just react a little bit. However, in any of the alliances that we have formed, and we've tried to help a lot of alliances be formed, it's fairly typical in order for them to be able to spread the risk to at least have a length of time that people have to stay so they can't just sort of willy-nilly come in, go out, and then go out to somebody who underbids, which would be fairly typical, and then a year later that bid rises. So, I mean, the operative part, there's no problem as far as people wanting to shop. The point, though, is if you do and you choose to leave, it's fairly typical for these kind of contracts to have a kind of a clause that is a limit of time before you come back. We do that in the alliances we formed, and that'd be typical here. So this says there can be no penalty. That's the problem with the current language.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, as I read this, and I don't understand this either, but it seems to me that what's in here is that there's shall not have a fine or penalty for someone who seeks information on a bid, and also requires them to the insurance company to give the experience data for the purpose of seeking a bid for an alternative. And it seems to me, as I've been explained this, that if someone wants to be able to go out and do some shopping for insurance, that they would be penalized and fined for even asking for that information. To go back, I don't see anything where it says that they can't keep them out for 5 years or whatever it is. That wasn't as it was explained to me. I thought it was just someone's got high interest, they want to go out and see, you know, what is my experience data for the purpose of seeking a bid for alternative coverage, and being able to go out and trying to get to a different bid. I mean, it seems as putting competition into the insurance instead of fencing them out.
Representative Dorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It does seem to me important that the only time that the member could seek this information would be...
Look closer to the mic. Sir.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Thank you. It seemed to me that the only time... It would be important to note that the only time a member seems to be able to seek this information is within 90 days of a renewal date. So it seems that they would be members of the co-op or insurance company for... almost the length entirely, but it makes some sense that as they near the end of whatever contract they had, that would be a point at which they would be able to do some shopping. That does limit the authority, in my mind, in a rather significant way.
Representative Creakey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, as chair of the House Tax Committee, I guess I allowed some leniency in this provision. I really don't believe that the Tax Committee is the proper place to debate insurance law and provisions. And When we finished the debate, I didn't, even though this amendment went on, I didn't make the motion to re-refer the education bill to the Commerce Committee. Members, I think that, again, if we're going to be talking about health insurance issues and contracts, the provision really should be discussed in the Commerce Committee, not in the Tax Committee, and most likely not here in the Ways and Means Committee either. So I would agree with Representative Bradley that this section most deservedly needs to be removed from the bill. Someone wants to offer the amendment on the floor, then we can have the debate on the floor with all the members participating in the discussion. But as I said, at this point in time, I think it would be judicious to remove it from the bill.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
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 Motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. The A-107 amendment, Representative Biskins, I believe, or Abler, Representative Abler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that amendment, and this has nothing to do with compensatory, so just to help the members' concerns. It does have to do with psychotropic drugs, though, which sound kind of good right about now. It has to do with readmission plans and about suspensions. And it says on page, there's actually a number of sections, members, and I'll kind of go through it. The first has to do with saying that with a suspension, there has to be a readmission plan. And if the student doesn't want to, if the parents don't want the student to be taking some kind of medication, that they don't have to be taking the medication to be readmitted. And that's repeated later in a different section of this bill to clarify that that's not necessary. And just to, that's page one, and that intent works through page two, line 12. So that's clear. The second part has to do with the screening program. And members, I've been relatively active in this part. I used to be on called ICC. It was this Interagency Coordinated Commission for Early Childhood Intervention. And the screenings that we've been doing on the three-year-olds and so on have been designed especially for the hearing and developmental disability issues and the likes of that. The language that extends this to social and emotional actually has the potential to be rather problematic and actually a very high cost driver if we're not careful. And so to address that and to emphasize the fact that we want to we're focusing on the true developmental disabilities, in particular the physical impairments, and there's a desire to extend it a bit to some of the learning. I think the more prudent step is to deal with the word cognitive and not social and emotional, and then and the rest of the language that's there follows through that idea. On page two, and then the top of page three, that whole section there reinstates who's eligible to participate. They have to have two of those characteristics. And so it's attempting to focus that's the original language, I think, of the bill. That's attempting to focus the screening, especially on those who have some likelihood of the need of it. And the last part on page 206 is... It focuses the programming. There's some deletions in there. It focuses on academic quality as opposed to programmatic quality, and I think it's more specific to the desire of where we want to be going with that. I'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Representative Riley.
I'm
done.
Okay. Members, you know, I suspect this is another one that's going to pass, but I don't believe this is necessary. Representative Abler, do you know of one instance where a child had to take a psychotropic medicine before they were allowed back into their school?
Representative Abler.
Not personally, Madam, Mr. Chair and Representative Riley. there has been testimony about that, though, and if it's only a clarifying thing, then I think that's good. I don't think there's a whole national movement and concern about the medicating of our children, especially in when it's not desired of the parents to do so, and many alternative methods that are even more beneficial. And at least that ought to be tried first before they're forced to medicate. And so I think this keeps the parents and the administration in a dialogue as opposed to giving one the upper hand.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grayley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you know, to me this looks like a legislative response to the information that a lot of us have been receiving over the last week or two, and that I know were passed out at some Republican conventions in the last week or two as well. And those, now we have to legislate to react to information that was very, very inaccurate. And, you know, I'm just sure we're going to pass it because I know how things go in this committee, but I couldn't live with myself if I didn't say that this is really, really way over the top to have to react to memos that come out that are so inaccurate, and not to screen children for social emotional problems when they're three is a huge disservice to children who might have those kind of problems whose parents wouldn't know it at that point. And that's the whole reason we have screenings. Representative Otremba and I were just at a conference on mental health a couple of weekends ago for National Conference of State Legislators, and this kind of stuff was some of what was discussed. And, you know, there is a national movement that's spreading very inaccurate amounts of information, and now we as a legislature are playing into that with your amendment. I'm surprised when you were the Legislator of the Year for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Minnesota last year that you would be the one to offer this amendment, Representative Abler, just like I was surprised that you would be the one to take money from the poor districts. I think these don't seem like you. I don't know why you're doing these kind of amendments.
Representative Hilty, Sikora, and Huntley. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Grayling, in answer to the question you asked, Representative Abler, I do know of such an instance. I don't see the necessity of elaborating on that, but I can assure you that it does happen.
Representative Sikora.
A few years ago, Mr. Chair, Representative Grayling, you remember, I think maybe you were even on the bill with me. It was the bill that dealt with pretty much the kids who were taking Ritalin, and the fact that at that point in time, I had many parents who called or wrote that I wish I'd have probably kept a record of them all. They kept a record of them all, but many of them who felt they were forced to put their children on a drug, that the teacher in school was suggesting that little Johnny wasn't working out very well in first grade and really ought to go on Ritalin, and they ought to go see their doctor and get him on the drug. And, you know, I agree they ought to go see their doctor if there's possibly a problem, but I don't think it's up to the teacher to be recommending that parents give the children drugs. I really think that the teacher can talk about behavior problems, but it's really the parents and the physician who should make that decision. But I did have a lot of parents who contacted me, and I know we heard that in our education committees and had a lot of testimony on it. And I still hear from a couple of the parents who at that time pulled their kids out of a school because they felt that they were absolutely being forced to put them on Ritalin and just didn't feel like they should do that. Now, I don't know what drugs this might be referring to specifically, but that one was pretty much Adderall and Ritalin and related drugs.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chairman, what's the name of this committee? I'm getting confused.
Human Services.
I don't know, Mr. Huntley. I don't even chair a committee. Representative Grayley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Huntley, actually, you bring up a very good point. If we would follow Representative Krinke for a change, we could take this out on the floor instead of having it in committee, because that was what he was saying about the Dabney Amendment. But anyway, Ritalin, this is talking about psychotropic medications, and Ritalin would be a different classification. This psychotropic medications would be much heavier, a different type. If you're talking about Ritalin, I know that some of that took place, but this is another class of medications, and we're getting into the types of drugs that would treat a more serious mental illness than just ADD or ADHD. So we could be agreed, and that's another issue.
Any further discussion? As many as are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. We'll go back to the AO4 amendment, and then there is an amendment to the amendment that is entitled Desk 1 that I take it, Representative Sikora, you're going to incorporate into your amendment?
Yes, essentially what this does, Mr. Chairman, is instead of taking any of the money for the pilot out of compensatory, it takes it all out of the IBAP appropriation. So it would all come out of there. And then I'd like to just orally add a little amendment here. We must adjust the general education appropriation accordingly.
Any discussion to the amendment as amended? Representative Dorn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know the hour is late, but I did have some questions from our previous discussion. Representative Sikora, I take it that with this amendment, then it would be Anoka Hennepin that would receive the dollars that we're removing?
They would still do the pilot, Mr. Chairman.
And
Representative Dorn.
Cora, when I look at Section 63, the pilot program that we are creating, it references that a commissioner may select up on lines, on page 55, lines 31 to 33, it references the commissioner may select up to 5 school districts to participate in the plan. Does this amendment mean that the other four other school districts that could also receive this amount of funding, or are we changing the essence of the pilot program as it was described in the bill in our committee?
Representative Sikora.
Mr. Chair, the money would not increase, so it would either have to be split up among others or it would be an Anoka Hennepin grant. And since it was brought by Anoka Hennepin, but under subdivision 13, you can see it says for a grant to independent school district number 11 in Anoka Hennepin.
So,
Representative Doran.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, as I look through section 63, it seems to me that the essence of the pilot program was to allow 5 districts to use their existing compensatory allocation in a different way, that they would be able to allocate based on school performance measures as opposed to just simply the concentration factor. It seems to me the essence of the pilot was to see if not if we would add dollars what would happen, but rather what could happen if there was flexibility within the existing dollars. So to that extent, these pilots were funded if schools chose to apply, if 5 schools chose to apply and use their dollars that way. It does concern me that the amendment is really changing, in my mind, kind of the essential philosophy of the original pilot. It's saying that what will we learn if we use dollars in a different way? It will be what will we learn if we add dollars to one district and see what happens. And I'm not sure we're gaining the same knowledge. I kind of like what we had originally in terms of learning. about how we're using compensatory. So it's a different, you know, slant, I realize, than the discussion we had in terms of where the money came from, just the essence of the proposal.
Representative Abrams, Representative Dorn, this pilot would still allow the commissioner to select up to five districts, but there would be special funding for Anoka-Hennepin, and they would be required to do a lot of reporting and try to develop another way to deal with the children and bring up their AYP scores, because this is geared to kids who are not scoring well in AYP. And so one of them would give more money to the program, trying that, and the other, that made a difference, and the others would do it with the money that they get now.
Well, and Mr. Chair,
Representative,
it seems to me the language on the application process specifies for all of those districts how they're going to identify test results, describe the distribution, summarize the evaluation procedure that they will use. So it seems to me the other districts would be doing some extensive reporting. So, and I'm not sure how that would differ from the new or from what Anoka-Hennepin would be doing in terms of their reporting. But I guess I just think we were closer to the right track with the original language. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I would hope, Mr. Chairman, Representative Dorn, that you are right, so that we can actually get better results without spending more money. But one of these would spend more money to see if that made a substantial difference, and the other one would be trying to do it with the compensatory revenue that's available now. Anoka-Hennepin doesn't get a huge amount of compensatory, actually, but, you know, the idea is we would have two different ways of looking at it.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Sakara, this amendment is a good amendment as far as it goes, but it still leaves the other part of your amendment intact. And that gets back to the issue of the children and the adults from the Thai refugee camp. And Representative Sakar, it's my understanding that Bokel's recommendations actually came from the governor's office. And it's also my understanding, I've been checking here just with some folks in the audience about your ability to match up that language with the Senate, and I've been told that in the Baby Ed bill over in the Senate that they've got the at least the ABE match up by putting more money into adult basic ed. I've also been told that one of the things that we're struggling with in this bill is that we're not following the governor's recommendation, unless I'm wrong, and maybe you or Mr. Crow can correct me, but we're not following the recommendation of the governor, not only in doing the refugee children and adult initiatives, if you will, here, but also in that we're not following the governor's recommendation in terms of providing for inflation and compensatory care. And that first part on the second page in the initial amendment, that's where that comes into play, because that has to do with counting those students for compensatory adjustment. And it seems to me that if we follow the governor's inflationary recommendations, that we'd be in a much better position to deal with that issue, maybe even deal with that issue without having to kind of highlight that initiative. So, members, the amendment is good right now so far as it goes, but, you know, for the other, 30-something school districts on this 25% equity increase in the metro region, this amendment makes it a gift in the city of St. Paul, the school district of St. Paul. That's basically what's left in this amendment. We've taken care of Red Lake, Minneapolis, and the other school districts, but this is a $6 million hit to the school district of St. Paul in order to do these 25% equity increases in the metro region. School districts, and I'm just curious of the members who are around the table who represent these school districts, what their vote was on the House resolution discussion when we had the Dorman-Grilling amendment before us, because it seems to me that if you voted against that, then this amendment that's before you is a pretty convenient amendment, because it really says that, you know, you can kind of have your cake and eat it too. You know, I could vote against, you know, putting more real money into our schools, or I can figure out a way to take $6 million out of one school district, and I can have my cake and eat it too. So I'm glad that the amendment, you're amending the amendment the way you are, Representative Sikora, but I wish you were going a lot further, and I think that apparently you would get support from the governor in doing that, and you would also get some backup from the Senate in being able to match those numbers down the line.
Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is an improvement over the earlier source of money, but I don't think it's a good one. You know, to take money for students who are gifted and talented and want to work harder and try to have more opportunities for learning as much as they can and give it all to one district, I think that's very unbecoming. You know, all the kids all around the state, and now they all have to pay for this regardless of what we should be doing and what the governor recommended. We used to pay for that, and we cut it out with budget constraints. Now we're able to put it back in. I would still be ashamed if I were Anoka Hennethon to take money from all the other kids in all the other districts and just for my district for a pilot.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, if I can talk to another part of 104 as well, if I may.
We're getting ready to vote, Representative Solberg, so you better.
Well, on the first page, lines 8 through 12, and lines 13 through 16, and so forth, I think in 19 through 24, as Representative Sikora went through this kind of technical amendment, I wrote down some numbers, and I think on the first ones, 8 through 12, I remember something about $3,700,000 the first year and $3,000,000 the next year for aid costs. I think that's some costs associated with it. I'm not sure. And lines 14 through 26, I got $6 million and multiplied for aid costs, and in the equity districts. And if I look at this other one that we have passed out here, I want to be able to understand what that says. That's 25% equity increase in the metro region. And it looks like not all metro region, but some at metro regions, increase per pupil. And then on 19 through 24, as we went through that, I had a $25 million levy in the first year and 20 the next year of levies. I need to understand, we focused on, excuse me, one little part of that amendment and some things in the compensatory, but it seems to me there's been some other shifts in this other part that have some major funding provisions from education and levy. I want to have a little bit better understanding before we vote on this, what we're doing here. I don't know where to start. Let's start with the lines 19 through 24. I wrote down the additional $25 million levy and $20 million levy. Is that correct? What are we doing there?
Mr. Crow, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, if you want to start at the bottom and work our way up, I'll clarify what the aid and levy impacts are of each of these sections. Lines 19 to 24, increased referendum equalization relative to what's in the House bill now in the fiscal year 08 and 09. And again, there's two types of impact to that. We carry an aid levy change due to tax relief, basically from increased equalization, and then there's a cost from the behavioral effect of additional referendums being passed. basically the cost of that provision is about $40 million in the out year.
So, Mr. Chair, is it safe to say then in the next biennium that we're allowing school districts to levy another $25 million in property tax?
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, we're allowing, there's no change in what districts are allowed to do. This just equalizes their referendum levies if they can get their voters to approve them. So we estimate that there will be an additional $41 million of new referendums passed in 08 and 09, and it's almost a 50-50 mix of aid and levy on the net cost of this proposal because of the tax relief that's also built into the higher equalized amount.
So this number here is built on the assumption that school districts will have to pass property tax increases to fund their schools. Okay, so I understand that now. Let's work backwards then. 14 through 16.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, on lines 14 through 16, we're estimating about a $6 million aid cost to that provision. Equity is a mix of aid and levy, but because this provision would change in fiscal 06, all of the costs in 06 would be aid, and a portion of it, about $3 million, would be levy in 07. Total cost of about $9 million during the current biennium, with about two-thirds of that being on aid and a third being levy.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Krulin, this piece of paper that I got handed out that said 25% equity increases metro region, I noticed that this helped me understand that. Is that an additional $4,600,000 going to Farmington and St. Francis and New Prague and Spring Lake Park and Stillwater and Invergrove Heights, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that's correct. Equity is divided into two regions, metro and non-metro. This would provide the additional 25% to the districts based on their current revenue if they are a metro district. And that $4 million figure you see isn't the cost, because that's the entitlement. And as you know, we do payment shift of 84.3%, 15.7%, so you don't have to carry the full cost of the increase in the first year. So that's why the cost isn't the total.
Having a quick lesson in education finance, this is additional money that these school districts would get that my school district would not get. Is that correct?
Mr. Crowell. Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, that's correct.
Okay. Then
Representative Cora on that point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, I think if you look at the runs, you will see that we did a number of things for rural Minnesota. We increased transportation sparsity aid, which made quite a difference. We also gave money to all the districts without a referendum, the poorest districts in the state, and brought them up to 10% of the average referendum. And we also, doing the equalization, since the cap was raised, we also raised commensurately the amount of money that was equalized. I don't think you could get much more fair than what we did in this bill. But when you looked at runs and saw how they came out per pupil, you will see you go through about three pages before you really hit suburban districts. And that's because the suburban districts had kind of been missed, the other metro suburban districts.
Mr. Chair, is that sober that I'm getting more of an education than what I really want, but I want to understand what that's doing in this relationship to this run. Then can we go back to the other part of that? I have written down 3.37 and 3 million from lines 8 through 12.
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, lines 8 through 12 are primarily a method to keep the aid and levy targets roughly in balance, and there is no policy change in terms of the amount of operating capital revenue, just the mix of aid and levy. And so the $3 million is the higher aid cost for operating capital to swap about $3.7 million of revenue. So the $3.7 million is the levy reduction. The $3 million is the aid increase from changing that equalizing factor, basically to bring the amendment in terms of aid levy mix into balance. And then the amount on line 11, the $15,000, that reduction in the equalizing factor for fiscal year 2009 and later, pay 2008 and later, generates about $25 million of increased levy and about $20 million of aid savings to keep the tail amount on the aid side the same as it was when the bill came into this committee.
Mr. Chair, that's too bad. I understood two of the three.
Representative Paymar.
Just quickly, Mr. Chair, I know we want to move on here, but I just would really urge the committee to vote against this amendment. You know, when a city like St. Paul in the state of Minnesota makes a commitment to bring refugees like we have done from Thailand, it seems to me that not only the city but the state of Minnesota has an ethical and moral obligation to help those refugees out. And if those folks can't speak English, they're not going to get jobs in the state of Minnesota. That's just the reality of it. And what Representative Sikora is doing is taking the money out that could provide intensive English instruction for those adult refugees. It seems to me that we have an obligation to help those folks out. And I'm sure there's other places that Representative Sikora could take the money to fund Representative Abler's little project here, rather than taking this from St. Paul. $6 million that would help refugees. And the governor, recommended this. He understands the problem here, and I just think this is really wrong, and I hope the committee votes no.
Representative Sikora.
Representative Abrams, Representative Paymar, pardon me, Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar. The money that we took out of IB was what funded the compensatory. And that was Abler's little project, as you referred to. So it wasn't money coming out of the refugees. However, you're right. We are not funding the refugees, and I don't know if any of you have ever noticed, but many times you don't do exactly what the governor recommends, and in this case, we did not.
Representative Dorman, then Representative Greiling. Representative Dorman.
Mr. Chair, just so I'm clear, are we going to vote, are we voting on the amendment to the amendment?
No, that has been incorporated, Representative Dorman. We're voting on the amendment.
At some point, I do have an amendment, I believe, Mr. Chair. Amendment to the amendment.
Okay, Representative Dorman.
The one I showed you earlier, Mr. Chair.
Pass it out. No. No.
What you got in your belly?
I mean, at least as far as I could tell, you were just.
Representative Dorman moves the amendment with page one on top of it. It's an amendment to the amendment. Representative Dorman will explain it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think if I follow the incorporation, President's Court has already deleted lines 3 through 7, so I don't know if that's redundant.
We'll change your amendment to reflect that, Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, what this does is that as I listened to the debate this evening about compensatory and refugees and what Representative Abel is trying to accomplish up in his area. What this amendment would do is get rid of everything happening in this amendment with the exception of this. It would save the $2 million for Representative Abler, and it would take it out of the first year of the QCOMP program. And so it keeps the QCOMP deal alive. It just reduces the amount of money in year one. There's not enough money in the whole thing anyway to fund it if every district wanted to apply for it, so it doesn't kill it. It just reduces the money, and it sends that $2 million up to Anoka Hennepin so we can find out if they've got a better way to calculate the compensatory revenue. And so I think it's pretty straightforward, Mr. Chair, but I would request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Sikora.
No.
Seeing no further discussion, the court will take the roll.
Not Black.
You're in a hurry.
Excused.
Dempsey.
No.
Abler.
No.
Abrams.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Beard.
No.
Bradley.
No.
Biskins.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Clark.
Yes.
Thurman?
Yes.
Doring?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Bradling?
Yes.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hamilton?
No.
Hilty?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Huntley?
Excused.
Kelleher?
Yes.
Cleansing?
No.
Klinke?
No.
Larson?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Nurnes?
No.
Ochamba?
Yes.
Hazlitt?
No.
Hamer?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Excuse.
Ruth?
No.
Seifert?
No.
Smith?
No.
Solberg?
Yes.
Sikora?
No.
Andevere?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Walker?
Yes.
There being 16 ayes and 19 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. On the amendment, any further discussion? Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested. Seeing no further discussion, clerk will take the roll.
Not Black.
Excused.
Dempsey.
Yes.
Abler.
Yes.
Abrams.
Yes.
Anderson.
No.
Beard.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Biskins.
Yes.
Carlson. Clark.
No.
Thurman?
No.
Doring?
No.
Earhart?
Yes.
Grayling?
No.
Gunther?
Yes.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Hilty?
No.
Holbert?
Yes.
Huntley?
Excuse.
Kelleher?
No.
Cleansing?
Yes.
Cranky?
Yes.
Larson?
No.
Mariani?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Nurnes?
Yes.
Ochamba?
No.
Hazlitt?
Yes.
Hamer?
No.
Rukavina?
Excuse.
Ruth?
Yes.
Seifert?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Snowberg?
No.
Sikora?
Yes.
Vanderveer?
Yes.
Virginius?
Yes.
Walker?
No.
Dempsey?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Virginius.
I will vote no.
Representative Huntley is here. The question is on passage of the Sikora amendment.
No.
No.
Good guess. There being 20 ayes and 16 nays, the motion prevails, the amendment is adopted. Representative Dorman will take the A97 amendment. Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A97 amendment would, you know, as I look at everything that's happening in this bill and we struggle to try to find more money for K-12 education through property taxes and we redefine what they are, and I see the QCOMP provisions in here, and I understand it's important to the governor, and, you know, for whatever reason, whether it has something to do with future aspirations or what have you, I do not know, but I don't kill the whole thing, but reduce the funding for it. Again, I would point out it's not 100% funded anyway, so it reduces the funding in the first year of the program from $19,329,000 to $10 million, in the second year from $75 million down to $20 million, takes those dollars and puts it on the existing general education formula. What you'd end up with is not a huge increase, but at least it goes out throughout the state in a fairly reasonable manner of $40 a person.
Any discussion on the amendment? Representative Sikora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would please urge you to vote no on this. Quite honestly, it's very problematic because he takes money out of the first year of the biennium, and we already have several schools in that program that will be accessing that funding next year. Three of them in Minneapolis, four more going into Minneapolis, and Pridley is in the program. There are several other schools, I don't have the whole list here, that are going into the program that will be accessing some funding for next year. And not to mention the fact that we had four or five other schools who were in an alternative pay program in the past who will continue to access money from this fund. In addition to that, this is something that teachers have expressed a big interest in, that many school districts have called and asked about and are seeking more information on, and even many who are beginning to do some negotiations in their districts between administration and unions. And I think that's a very positive step, and to take the money out now would be very, very premature and a rather silly thing to do for a very promising experiment. Waseca is also in the program. They have some rather astounding results in what they're doing with students, and I'm sure Minneapolis has too. I just haven't had a chance to call them to get those. So I would urge you not to take that money out.
Representative Carlson? Representative Carlson requests the roll call. Seeing no further discussion, clerk will take the roll.
Not
excused.
Dempsey?
No.
Abler?
No.
Abrams?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Beard?
No.
Bradley?
No.
Biskins?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
German?
Yes.
Doran?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Bradley?
Yes.
Gunther?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hilty?
Yes.
Holberg?
No.
Huntley?
Yes.
Kelleher?
Yes.
Lindsay?
No.
Clinky?
No.
Larson?
Yes.
Mariani?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Nernis?
No.
Otremba?
Yes.
Osmet? Hamer?
Yes.
Rukavina?
Pat, excused.
Ruth?
No.
Seifert?
No.
Smith?
No.
Solberg?
Yes.
Sikora?
No.
Vandeveer?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Walker?
Yes.
There being 16 ayes and 20 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Dorman, you wish to offer the A87 amendment?
Well, I'll try, Mr. Chair. What the heck?
Dorman offers the A87 amendment. Representative Dorman.
I'm sorry, excuse me. I didn't hear you, Representative. No, Mr. Chair, excuse me. This amendment, Mr. Chair, members, part of the, you know, I hear conflicting things, and it's easily, I'm an easily confusable guy, but from sometimes from certain members of my caucus, I hear we put too much money into K-12 education, and then I hear we don't put enough in, and that's why we've got to increase the excess levies. And so what this does, the one that kind of really, I think, sticks out is the $300 cap, the $300 above the grandfather districts. I think there's six of them that it would impact. St. Louis Park, I won't mention the second one, Minnetonka, Hopkins, St. Anthony, Roseville, and Fisher. You know, in the case of St. Louis Park, they're already above the cap. It seems like if we're putting enough money into K-12 education, that ought to be enough. So what it does is it takes only that provision. I really believe we ought to take the other provision out too, if we're going to fund K-12 education, which I thought was the promise of the 2001 tax bill. I'm not sure why we have to take the excess levy amount from 18% to 28%, but that one didn't fare so well in tax committee at all. But then again, neither did this one. But members, it does take the, I think there's a tax savings, a property tax refund savings, and adds, I think, $9 onto the formula. So it's not a huge swing, but again, I would think that when dollars are scarce, that's where we ought to be. We ought to be putting the dollars.
Representative Dorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I didn't look at this amendment earlier, but I'll speak in support of the Dorman Amendment. I carry around my copy of the Minnesota Constitution so I can refer periodically to the language about establishing a general and uniform system of public schools, and I think we've done well in Minnesota to close the gap and try to have equity for all. I think I saw in Governing Magazine there are like 24 states that are currently in litigation. Over school funding, not all of them anymore, even about equity. The unique that now adequacy is also an issue that's into the courts. But I think we've really tried hard to find ways so that all the kids were really being treated as equally as possible. And I think in a lot of our districts, certainly in my district, a more rural district, that is a very important issue. So I would speak in support of the Dorman Amendment.
Representative Sikora.
Obviously, I don't support that amendment. What this does is it allows a few districts who get no aid in almost any category to tax themselves further. There's no cost to the state. Essentially, they pay 100% of the cost of that referendum themselves. There is no aid that goes to them. So to allow them to tax themselves, and they aren't the highest spending districts. Minnetonka's 98, Roseville is 56, Orono, who's close to the cap, is 137, Edina is 90th. So these are not necessarily the highest spending districts, but they don't get a lot of money in any other categories. So this allows them to continue to fund their schools.
Representative Silver.
Mr. Chairman, I think coming from a rural district and have the same kind of concerns that are expressed by Representative Dorn, or Dorman, I'm sorry, if we continue down this road, those wealthier school districts, and I don't begrudge any school district for being wealthy or wanting to have great schools, I want to have that same opportunity. But, you know, I think with those that are extremely property poor, and we'll find most of those in Representative Seifert's and Hamilton's district and that type of thing, we are creating, I think, a different kind of educational opportunities. I was around when we had the lawsuit bought by some school districts on the equity funding, and one of the reasons the state won that lawsuit, and I was watching the court, I actually went to the Supreme Court and listened to their arguments, was that we were moving away from this inequality in educational funding. The fact is, I think it was at the time it was some initiative by Representative Bowerly. If I recall right, the court said that one of the reasons that they said we were okay in our funding is because we had legislative approval of moving away from that. I think we're going back the other way, and I think it's particularly harmful for rural school districts.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if
Representative Earhart.
If we want to get into this, I got three handouts. Where's the page? You want to get into it? You want to adopt it?
Representative Earhart, you're going to win the vote anyway. Do you? You wish to have the handout passed out, Representative Earhart? Be happy to. Where's the page?
I'd like to.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, as many as are in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
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 Motion does not prevail.
Division
having been called for, as many as are in favor of the amendment, raise their hand.
Everybody was screwed up. We better do it this way.
Thank you. Put your hands down. Those opposed. There being 16 ayes and 20 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Now we're on to the DFL amendments. Representative Greiling offers the A62 amendment. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. A62 removes the section that deals with the Mounds View School District. This one was discussed in committee quite a bit, and you may have been receiving a lot of emails on this. We have a lot of support for taking this section out from parents and the school board, the superintendent, and I know Representative Krinke has his reasons for this that I'm sure we're going to hear in a minute, but to me, this amendment kind of flies in the face of local control and fiscal responsibility on the part of the school district that we all seek. We, Mounds View has to sell two schools due to declining enrollment, and they're trying to use it to maintain the other school. This amendment, or this provision in the bill that I'm trying to remove, would force them to put it into a trust and then only be able to use the interest for the general fund. And it just seems like meddling in the school district's affairs. That's what many people have told us. I did hear from one PTA president who said it was a unanimous vote on the part of the people there, and none of them were the school board members or the administrators. So I would urge members to vote to delete this section.
Representative Krinke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I would urge you to defeat the Greiling Amendment and keep this provision in the bill. Members, this deals with a parcel of land that the school district acquired over 40 years ago by eminent domain. They never used the property. They when a case was brought in court to by the owner of the property to get the property back, the school district fought the owner because the taking was not for public purpose. The court threw it out on a technicality. Members, it boils down to $6.3 million that the school district is going to gain from the sale of this property, and I believe that the residents of the district would best be served by keeping this money in trust and using the interest from that trust. And members, let me tell you why I think that's the case. In 1999, the school district went out for a capital referendum asking the voters of the district to approve an $80 million bond sale for improvements to the district. Members, I have here the school district's document, April 12, 2005, construction budget update. The original budget for the proposed improvements, capital improvements in 1999, $84.9 million. The subsequently, the district has $35.6 million in mechanical upgrades. The new master budget, $120 million, and members' change orders, $25 million in change orders. These were not voter-approved referendums, and I think the district has had a situation of expending enough capital dollars without voter approval, and in this situation of $6 million for a land sale, that this money should be kept in trust, and if the district wants to spend more money on capital improvements, they should go ask the voters of the district rather than just taking the $6 million and expending it now. So, again, members, I would just ask you to defeat the Greiling Amendment.
Seeing no further discussion, those in favor of the Greiling Amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
Division.
Division has been requested. As many as are in favor of the Greiling Amendment, please raise your hand. Obviously, a sufficient number having voted in favor, the motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Representative Greiling moves the A99 amendment. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that we are short of time, so I'm going to rattle through this really quickly. This amendment sets up an education fund that would receive direct appropriations by increasing the income tax on...
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Representative Seifert, I have had 3 hours or 4 hours to look at the amendment. Procedures in committee are more informal, number one. Number two, it is unclear to me if it violates the budget resolution, number two. Number three, it probably would not be germane on the floor, but having sat in this committee now for, I don't know, since Representative Stolberg chaired it, nothing is non-germane in Ways and Means. So unless you have a compelling reason, Representative Slyper.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to do 4.03, but I'm happy to just vote it down as well. It depends on, I'll withdraw the point of order if we can vote by midnight, Representative Graham.
We will, Representative
Slyper. Okay, thank you. Let's move on. I'll withdraw the point of order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that would be my desire too, and I'd like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested.
The fund is funded by increasing the income tax and the foreign operating corporation loophole, closing those loopholes. It's used for
in the ridge.
On the last page, you'll see that it, the places that it's used for, the first $60 million is for all-day kindergarten. The next $20 million is for special ed funding, the growth factor 5%. And then the rest is for the formula. 5% the first year, 5% the second year, $250 per pupil each year.
Representative Solberg.
Just a point of clarification in the income tax, it's the top two brackets from the tax incident study goes up to the 8.5%, which was the same rate that was before the tax reform of 98. So it's those over $250,000.
Well, members, I would recommend a no vote for a variety of reasons. We'll talk about the income tax reason at a later date, but this just doesn't work, Representative Greiling. There is no, if you look at the Minnesota corporate income tax return, there's no line that says foreign operating corporation income. There's no line that says dividends received. It would be impossible for the Commissioner of Revenue without auditing each and every subchapter C return to be able to comply with this provision. Any further discussion? If not, the clerk will take the roll.
Not Black.
Excused.
Dempsey?
No.
Ibler?
No.
Abrams?
No.
Anderson?
Aye.
Beard?
No.
Bradley?
No.
Diskins?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Clark?
Yes.
Dorman?
Yes.
Doran?
Yes.
Earhart?
No.
Greiling?
Aye.
Gunther?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hilty?
Yes.
Tolbert.
No.
Huntley.
Yes.
Kelleher.
Yes.
Crimson.
No.
Greinke.
No.
Larson.
Yes.
Mariani.
Yes.
McNamara.
No.
Nernis.
No.
Ochemba.
Yes.
Osment.
No.
Hamer.
Yes.
Rukavina.
Excused.
Bruce.
No.
Seifert.
No.
Smith.
No.
Silbert.
Yes.
Sakura.
No.
Vandeveer.
No.
Wiginius.
Yes.
Walker.
Yes.
There being 16 ayes and 20 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Third reading. Any further discussion? If not, those in favor of the motion, that House File 872 be recommended to pass as amended, sent to the General Register, say aye.
Aye.
As opposed, say no.
No.
The motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.